Я для этого тебе тебя тут кел, а то ты
дура, пласта я.
Тут удобный.
Good afternoon, everybody. We have our friends from Yakutia in Russia who would like to do a cleansing ritual. They are leaving this afternoon, so they requested that they do a ritual which will be helping us. So let's just let them do this for a while before we convene the meeting.
Yes. I don't think you heard it.
Good afternoon, everybody. My colleagues are still, all of my colleagues are still not, most of my colleagues except for Hassan Iqbal Qassam are still not here, but I would like to take this opportunity to first call on a person who is also leaving very soon. But the 13th session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, we will continue with our deliberations on item 7 of the agenda, future work of the Permanent Forum, including issues of economic and social council and emerging issues. Before we move on to my colleague Hassan Iqbal Qassam and also Lars Anders Behr and myself to give some introductory statements on the item on climate change, I would like to see whether Justa Cabrera de Flores is in the room. Yes, Justa, you are in the room. You can take the floor while we are waiting for the other colleagues to come. You have the floor, ma'am. Yeah, this is on item 4 in human rights.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Mi nombre es Justa Cabrera, soy del pueblo guaraní de Bolivia. Extendemos un saludo fraternal de parte de las organizaciones indígenas de diferentes partes del mundo. Copatrocinan esta declaración conjunta. Señora presidenta, hemos seguido con mucha atención las intervenciones de algunos representantes de los gobiernos, donde han señalado avances significativos de los esfuerzos de los gobiernos de mejorar la situación de los pueblos indígenas en cada uno de sus países. Sin embargo, la realidad de nuestros pueblos es diferente a los avances que señalan y cada día se agudiza más con las violaciones de nuestros derechos. Hacer un recuento de las violaciones de nuestros derechos fundamentales en el mundo resulta una tarea difícil, compleja de presentar en este foro de las Naciones Unidas. No existe documentación sistematizada al respecto. Sin embargo, en los últimos años se han acumulado documentos y testimonios que pintan un panorama sombrío persistente de la situación de los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas del mundo. Sin pretender hacer un inventario exhaustivo, intentaremos simplemente dar una visión general al tema. Sin lugar a duda, las más persistentes son las violaciones a los derechos económicos, sociales y culturales, particularmente en lo que se refiere a la posesión y usufructo de la tierra y de los recursos naturales. A los pueblos indígenas se les niega el derecho a decidir sobre sus recursos naturales dentro de sus territorios ancestrales. Muchos de ellos son desplazados forzosamente de las mismas para dar concesiones a las industrias transnacionales, entre otros. Los pueblos indígenas continuamos sufriendo discriminación de parte de la sociedad dominante sin que los estados tomen medidas concretas para mejorar la situación. A nivel mundial, las violaciones, asesinatos y represión a los pueblos indígenas ocurren a diario y en mayor medida los pueblos indígenas minoritarios dentro de los países. Ante esta situación, queremos recomendar al Foro Permanente sobre las Cuestiones Indígenas lo siguiente: buscar mecanismos apropiados, impulsar el diálogo entre gobierno de Indonesia con los pueblos indígenas de Papúa Occidental para el reconocimiento de sus derechos fundamentales, recomendar al gobierno de India que repela al cuál es utilizado los estados de Manipur para reprimir los pueblos indígenas. Recomendar al gobierno de la República del Ecuador declarar una moratoria sobre las nuevas actividades petroleras a desarrollarse en los territorios de los pueblos Huaorani y Zápara y respetar los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en la situación de aislamiento voluntario que viven en la Amazonía ecuatoriana, prohibiendo el ingreso de empresas petroleras en los bloques 31, el ITT. Recomendar a los estados que implementen políticas y leyes para erradicar las violaciones que sufren las mujeres indígenas a nivel mundial. Desarrollar un mecanismo para recordar sistemáticamente las violaciones de los derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas a nivel mundial. Impulsar acciones conjuntas a las agencias o órganos de las Naciones Unidas para mejorar la situación de los pueblos indígenas en derechos económicos, sociales y culturales. Recomendar al gobierno de Perú que inmediatamente retire su presencia militar de los territorios de los pueblos indígenas amazónicos y dialogar con dirigentes indígenas amazónicos para resolver los conflictos de manera pacífica y respecto a los derechos además pedir al gobierno peruano la cancelación de las licitaciones a los lotes 39, 67 y 107 para proteger los derechos de los pueblos indígenas y aislamiento voluntario que se encuentra en dichas áreas. Recomendar al gobierno de Bolivia que trabaje con el pueblo guaraní para desarrollar un plan de reasentamiento de las comunidades que recientemente lograron el reconocimiento legal de sus territorios y que provean los fondos necesarios para cumplir con este plan. Señora Presidenta, creemos necesario que el foro permanente sobre las cuestiones indígenas debe coordinar con los mecanismos existentes en relación a los pueblos indígenas de tener un rol más activo, efectivo, para impedir las violaciones de los derechos fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas del mundo. Muchas gracias, señora Presidenta.
Thank you very much, Justa Flores, who is from Bolivia. She was one of those who have talked to us when we did the mission in the Chaco regions of Bolivia and also in Paraguay. Thank you very much for your statement. I would like now to move into our agenda item 7 on the future work of the Permanent Forum, including issues of economic, social council, and emerging issues. I would like to ask now my dear colleague Hassan Idbal Qassam to give us a brief introduction of the paper that he prepared on the issue of climate change and the relationship of this with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. After him, Peymane Haste will also say a brief statement. So you have the floor, Hassan.
Je voudrais présenter cette note en français. Ça concerne la conformité des politiques et des projets relatifs au changement climatique aux normes énoncées dans la Déclaration des Nations Unies sur les droits des peuples autochtones. À l'occasion de nombreuses réunions tenues dans le monde entier, les peuples autochtones se sont maintes fois inquiétés de ne pas être associés à l'élaboration des politiques et programmes nationaux relatifs au changement climatique. Ils se sont également émus de ne pas avoir été invités à participer au dialogue international mené dans le cadre de la Convention cadre sur le changement climatique. Consciente de ces préoccupations, l'instance permanente sur les questions autochtones a nommé à sa 6e session deux rapporteurs spéciaux, Victoria Tarle-Corpus et Aklok Lynch, qu'elle a chargée d'établir un rapport sur l'impact des mesures visant à atténuer les effets des changements climatiques sur les territoires, les terres et les ressources des peuples autochtones, et de le lui présenter à sa 7e session. À sa 7e session également, l'instance permanente a arrêté le thème spécial de sa 7e session, à savoir changement climatique, diversité bioculturelle et moyens d'existence. Le rôle de gardien des peuples autochtones et les nouveaux défis à relever. À sa 7e session, elle a décidé de nommer, sans incidence financière, Hassan Idbal Qassam et Peymane Haste, membres de l'instance comme rapporteurs spéciaux, chargés d'effectuer une étude visant à déterminer si les politiques et projets relatifs au changement climatique respectent bien les normes énoncées dans la Déclaration des Nations Unies sur les droits des peuples autochtones. L'instance permanente a également décidé d'inviter le mécanisme d'experts sur les droits des peuples autochtones créé par le Conseil des droits de l'homme et le groupe d'appui interorganisation sur les questions autochtones à participer à l'étude. Elle a en outre demandé à Mme Haste Peymane Idbal Qassam de lui présenter un aperçu de l'étude à sa 8e session et un rapport sur celle-ci à sa 9e session. Les rapporteurs spéciaux considèrent conformément au mandat qui leur a été confié que le rapport doit comporter des études et des informations émanant de toutes les parties agissant en faveur des peuples autochtones en ce qui concerne les menaces que font peser les changements climatiques sur l'existence et les droits de ces peuples, les politiques nationales des pays concernés et le degré de reconnaissance que ces pays accordent aux peuples autochtones et à leurs droits, et indiquer dans quelle mesure ceux-ci sont associés à l'exécution des politiques relatives au changement climatique. Cela permettra de s'assurer que l'étude présente les informations les plus pertinentes afin de savoir si les politiques nationales relatives au changement climatique sont conformes aux normes énoncées dans la Déclaration des Nations Unies sur les droits des peuples autochtones. La présente note préliminaire fit suite à la demande formulée par l'instance permanente à sa 7e session. Maintenant, je voudrais passer la parole à Madame Paimane pour finir le rapport. Merci.
Thank you very much, Hassan Iqbal Qassam. I'd like to call now on my colleague Paimane Haste, member of the Permanent Forum. You have the floor, Paimane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for giving me the floor, and I'd like to thank my dear colleague Hassan for introducing this very important project. If I may continue, the special rapporteurs for this project, myself and Hassan, are of the view that the impact of climate change mitigation measures on indigenous peoples and on their territories and lands has highlighted the extent to which climate change threatens indigenous peoples, particularly since the participation of indigenous peoples in the formulation of climate change policies remains deficient. The main principle contained in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples include equality of indigenous peoples in relation to all other peoples, B, freedom from discrimination of any kind in the exercise of indigenous peoples' rights, C, respect for and promotion of the rights of indigenous peoples as affirmed in treaties and agreements, D, respect for the free, prior, and informed consent of indigenous peoples, E, equal rights for indigenous peoples, F, participation of indigenous peoples in all stages of decision-making, such as planning, decision, and execution. The following items also will be elaborated on the main report to be presented in the next session. One is the standards. Standards are the rights contained in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, duties and obligations, which are the standards contained in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and also the adherence of climate change policies to the standards set forth in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. For the topics to be addressed by the study, including the following, are these are the topics to be addressed. A is the binding or optional nature of the standards set forth in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. B, the importance of respecting indigenous peoples' right to self-determination in the context of climate change policies. C, rights relating to lands, natural resources, and the role of indigenous people in dealing with climate change. D, the right to maintain and develop political, legal, economic, and social institutions, which contained in Articles 15 to 18 and 20 of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. E, the right to participate in political life contained in Article 5. I, the right to recognize treaties and agreements contained in Article 37, respect for free, prior, and informed consent contained in Articles 10, 11, and 19, and the right to cultural identity, Articles 9 and 11 to 16. Consideration of some of the issues that need to be addressed is essential for the production of a comprehensive study on the extent to which the standards set forth in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples are being observed with respect to climate change. Yet, if the relevant parties were to consider it necessary, there would be no harm in also adding those contributions made in response to this preliminary note and those comments on each of the issues that concern the study marginally or even remotely. We welcome all suggestions and contributions and any recommendations that could enrich this preliminary paper and its themes and result in the production of a satisfactory study, one that will make it possible to gather together and adopt recommendations that serve mankind as it confronts the future in the lap of its mother, the Earth. All responses, contributions, and studies should be submitted preferably before the end of August 9, 2009, in order to allow us as rapporteurs the sufficient time to consider them and prepare them in our final report. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, my distinguished colleague, Pema Nehaste. And before I open the floor to the participants, there is another report that my distinguished colleague, Lars Anders Baer, and myself putting together, which is on the local adaptation and mitigation measures of indigenous peoples to climate change and the road towards Copenhagen and beyond. This report has not been finished as like the other reports because we wanted to integrate the results of the various summits that were held by indigenous peoples since the start of the year. Actually, since last year. Last September, the Arctic indigenous peoples held their own summit workshop on climate change adaptation, and the results of this were also sent to us. And then at the start of the year, in February, the Asia Summit on Indigenous Peoples and Climate Change also was convened, where many indigenous peoples from 13 countries in Asia took part, and the focus of the discussions were on adaptation and mitigation measures of indigenous peoples at the local level, and also the roadmap from that moment until Copenhagen and also beyond. After that, there was another regional summit, which was the African Regional Summit on Indigenous Peoples on Climate Change, which was held in Nakuru in Kenya. And immediately after that, the Latin American Regional Summit on Indigenous Peoples and Climate Change also took place. The one in Nakuru was organized by IMPIDO, the Maasai Pastoralist Indigenous Development Organization, led by Joseph Olesimel, and the one in Latin America was organized by Tarsila Rivera Zeya of the Chirapak, and the one in the Asia was organized by Tebteba Foundation, my own organization. This all culminated into the Anchorage conference, the Global Summit on Indigenous Peoples and Climate Change. And all these different summits actually contained many of the things that we have wanted to put in the report, but we didn't manage to do that because time has been, we have lost time. But I would like to take this opportunity to ask my dear colleague Lars Anders Baer to just walk us through some of the recommendations that have come up from the Arctic in relation to adaptation measures of indigenous peoples in the Arctic. Lars Anders, you have the floor.
and to give an example of various models and best practice on mitigation and adaptation measures undertaken by indigenous people. And as the chairperson mentioned, this is a recommendation from the Arctic area. And that's a preliminary recommendation of the Arctic Council Sustainable Working Group, ELAT Information. Based on the work of this Arctic Council Sustainable Developing Working Group, ELAT Information projects in 2007 and 2008 including the 7 community-based workshops held so far, and based on a vision of a future sustainable and resilient circular polar reindeer husbandry. The following preliminary recommendations to the Arctic Council Sustainable Working Group has been made, and this has also been sent to us. Firstly, it is important to support the knowledge sharing on impacts and adaptation measures connected to the climate change and the loss of grazing lands, while also recognizing the value of traditional knowledge as a foundation for adaptation. And then it is important to support capacity building for indigenous societies facing climate change and loss of grazing land, both in terms of supporting recruitment of young scientists from reindeer herding communities and in terms of supporting institution building in local reindeer herding communities for local competence building. And it is also said that they are concerned about the explosion of human activities linked to climate change and the loss of grazing land for reindeers and caribou. Grazing land use for reindeer has to be protected as an adaptive measure to climate change and a sustainable Arctic society. It is also mentioned that the importance to define institutional mechanisms which constrain indigenous people's organal resilience and ability to adapt to climate change. And this was one of the recommendations that have been coming from the Arctic area. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lars Anders Baer, member of the Permanent Forum from the Arctic. I would like to conclude now this part by just sharing with you briefly the road towards Copenhagen and beyond. As I mentioned, this was discussed extensively in the various summits, and these are some of the recommendations that emerge from the Asia Summit, the Nakuru Summit in Kenya, and the Latin American Summit. First, we believe that for indigenous peoples to be effectively engaged, to effectively participate in the framework Convention on Climate Change and other climate change processes at the global, national, and regional levels, it is so crucial to raise the level of awareness of indigenous peoples on climate change and the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. Secondly, we also agree that the impacts, that there should be a continuing documentation of the impacts of climate change on indigenous peoples and their local mitigation and adaptation measures. This is very important because we want to show the world that indigenous peoples are contributing significantly to mitigation, and they are also doing all they can to be able to adapt to the adverse impacts of climate change. There are lots of researches which came into our attention on these things, and we would like to consolidate this to be included in our report, which can be presented next year. Thirdly, we also would like to support the campaigns of indigenous peoples against projects and policies which worsen climate change and which violate the rights of indigenous peoples, and also to support the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which were referred to by my colleagues Hassan Edbalkasam and Pema Nihaste. Fourthly, we think that it's important to enhance the capacities of indigenous peoples to mitigate and adapt to climate change and to implement their own visions and perspectives of development. And finally, we want that indigenous peoples' capacities also will be enhanced to influence national, global, and regional processes and decisions on climate change and to implement their own economic, social, and cultural development. At the global summit in Anchorage, there were 5 points that were mentioned in terms of how indigenous peoples would like to be engaged with the formal processes of the climate change negotiations. The first point was that we should organize regular technical briefings by indigenous peoples on traditional knowledge and climate change during the sessions of the climate change negotiations. Secondly, that we push for the recognition and better engagement of the International Indigenous Peoples Forum on Climate Change and its regional focal points in an advisory role for the convention. Thirdly, we are asking that an indigenous focal point in the Secretariat of the Climate Change Convention should be established, and we are appealing to some governments to support this focal point there in the Climate Change Convention. We have seen that the existence of a focal point on indigenous peoples in the Convention on Biological Diversity has helped significantly the participation of indigenous peoples in that convention, and we are looking forward to having an indigenous focal person in the Secretariat of the UNFCCC. Fourth, we also would like that indigenous peoples can be appointed in the various funding mechanisms on the Climate Change Convention. And these are funds like the Adaptation Fund Board, the Least Developed Country Board, among others. And finally, we are calling that there should be necessary measures taken to ensure the full and effective participation of indigenous and local communities in formulating, implementing, and monitoring activities on mitigation and adaptation relating to impacts of climate change. So these are some of the points that are contained in our preliminary report, and we are going to further flesh this out as we take part in the forthcoming negotiations around climate change. So this is the little overview of the report that we are preparing in relation to these measures. We can now move on now to the speakers who are in the list, and this we are going to tackle agenda item 7. We're finished with the agenda item 4. We had at least 20 people speak, so I think we will not have a chance anymore to go back to that list. So let me call on the representative of the observer government of Suriname, Ms. Miriam McIntosh. You have the floor. Yes, you have the floor, ma'am.
My delegation has attentively followed the interventions made and discussions held on the various items of the 8th session of this permanent forum meeting. And we consider that many meaningful contributions have been made, and we would like to recommend to the forum in order to be better able to effectively address the pertinent issues of indigenous peoples, that constructive dialogue, transparency, and accountability remain guiding principles in the interaction between members of the forum, member states, and organizations of indigenous peoples. With regard to the issue of climate change, I would like to recall the statement of the President of the Republic of Suriname at last year's general debate, where he alluded that environmental disasters or disturbances are of such grave nature that the international community can no longer ignore their negative impacts on the world, its people, and the resources. Today, we have more than enough evidence about the devastating effects of climate change. There is more than enough proof that human activity in many ways has and continues to contribute to the deteriorating situation of the global climate. Since no country and no people will be spared of the negative effects of climate change, we have a duty to collectively address and seek solutions in order to be better able to preserve our climate for present and future generations. As a low-lying coastal state in the north of South America, we really are feeling now the devastating effects of climate change. The flooding in the interior in 2006 and its effects on indigenous and tribal communities have induced the government of Suriname to accelerate its actions to reduce the negative effects on or due to climate change. Adaptation measures such as sea defense mechanism systems are underway, as well as education of the general public on the effects of and coping with climate change. As a country with 90% of its territory covered by forest, we are aware of the value and potential to contribute to the global mitigation of climate change, the conservation of biological diversity, and the protection of water resources. Like many other high forest countries, Suriname has to cope with balancing the development of the country and its people on the one hand, and the continued conservation of the forest for the benefit of humankind on the other hand. The critical challenge we face can only be counterbalanced if countries like my own are effectively included in a future international forest carbon mitigation and trading regime, since international displacement of emissions can only be prevented if a system is developed that will attract global participation and mutual commitment while providing sufficient financial incentives to developing countries with a high forest cover and low deforestation rate. Last year in Suriname, a country-led initiative was held for financing for sustainable forest management with the objective to assess the possibilities of establishing a global financial mechanism for sustainable forest management. We are therefore extremely disappointed that the recently concluded 8th session of the United Nations Forum on Forests could not conclude with the establishment of such an essential global fund. We express the hope that the international community will resume the discussion on financing for sustainable forest management in order to successfully conclude with the establishment of such a global fund. Our ultimate goal should be to have a comprehensive agreement under the UNFCCC process. Such an agreement must tackle climate change in all its fronts, including adaptation, mitigation, clean technologies, deforestation, and resource mobilization. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, the representative of the Observer State of Suriname. I think this is the first time that we also heard from Suriname, so I really thank you for coming over and talking about these important issues related to forest and climate change. I would like to call now on Inter-American Development Bank representative, Mr. Carlos Pirafan. Mr. Pirafan, you have the floor, sir.
Buenos días a todos. Quería hablar sobre tres temas. El primero es que es bien conocido que los pueblos indígenas, en términos de tenencia de la tierra, son sus tierras colectivas las que más contribuyen a mitigar, a adaptarse al cambio climático, porque son las que les permiten precisamente ejercer, digamos, sus prácticas de economía tradicional, no monetaria, basadas en la reciprocidad. Mas, sin embargo, desde hace unos años existe verdaderamente un paradigma que plantea la necesidad de privatizar estas tierras donde son colectivas para que los pueblos indígenas entren al mercado y así salgan de la pobreza. A este modelo nosotros le llamamos el modelo estándar de privatización. En los últimos dos años en el Banco Interamericano de Desarrollo hemos hecho un estudio en cuatro países en que hemos probado si este modelo está funcionando o no. El modelo presume cuatro, digamos, consecuencias, que son que si se privatiza la tierra, la inversión intrapredial va a ser mayor. Es la primera. La segunda es que va a haber un mayor acceso a los créditos. La tercera es que va a haber un mayor ingreso familiar, y la cuarta es que se va a generar un sano mercado de tierras. Nosotros hicimos unos trials bastante detallados en cuatro países, como les digo, que fueron México, Perú, Bolivia y Honduras. Este estudio no está publicado todavía, pero ya fue terminado, y en los cuatro casos no encontramos ninguna evidencia realmente representativa de que ninguno de los cuatro presupuestos del modelo se cumpliesen, lo que es realmente muy sorpresivo. Yo quiero llamar la atención de este punto al honorable foro, porque me parece que estamos muchos bancos y muchos gobiernos trabajando sobre un modelo que en ningún momento se ha probado que funcione. Y teniendo el tema del cambio climático, digamos, atravesado en toda esta temática, yo creo que es muy importante y me permito muy humildemente proponer para la próxima sesión que se analice esta temática de los modelos de tenencia de la tierra. Es obvio que todos los pueblos persiguen que se les respete colectivamente, digamos, un gran título de territorio, pero cuando se trata de cómo manejar, administrar las tierras, estamos trabajando sobre unos modelos que no respetan ni tienen en cuenta las formas tradicionales ni el conocimiento tradicional de los pueblos indígenas. Pienso que este es un tema muy importante en términos de tenencia de la tierra para tener en cuenta. El segundo tema es que por demandas que nosotros tenemos en el banco, nosotros al fin y al cabo somos un banco, hemos estado explorando en los últimos 2 años lo que le llamamos el portafolio de empresariado indígena, que está focalizado en un tipo de negocios que no son, digamos, ni individuales ni del nivel micro, sino que serían negocios utilizando los recursos y los territorios de los pueblos indígenas. Hemos logrado analizar 70 posibles proyectos y de ese análisis hemos encontrado unos cuellos de botella muy particulares, como son, digamos, el principal de ellos le llamamos nosotros la arquitectura financiera. Y el segundo tiene que ver con la gobernanza económica, el tercero tiene que ver con planes de negocio y el cuarto tiene que ver con asuntos legales. Estos son, digamos, los elementos que impiden que estas propuestas de los pueblos indígenas se hagan realidad, tal como es el resultado de nuestro análisis. Y yo quisiera con esto decir una cosa que creo que es muy clave y es la siguiente. Nosotros como bancos, y creo que en esto comparto con los otros bancos regionales, en el tema económico hemos tratado a los indígenas como donantes, no los vemos como clientes de nuestros préstamos, de nuestras operaciones, de los servicios financieros. El gran cuello botella es que los indígenas no tienen acceso a los sistemas financieros en ninguna parte del mundo, con la probable excepción de Norteamérica y de Canadá, y en algunos casos con algunas cuestiones que tienen que ver con Rusia. Pero yo creo que este es un tema bien importante que también quería proponerlo, en el sentido en que se asuma, digamos, un papel de este foro en lo que son estos cuellos de botella para la promoción del empresariado indígena colectivo, empresariado indígena sobre recursos animales. Gracias.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank the representative of IABB, Carlos Perafan. I'd move now to the indigenous list, and I'd call on Wenceslao Herrera, the Parlamento Indígena de America. Is Wenceslao in the room? Yes, you have the floor, sir.
Muchas gracias, Presidenta. Y Camila Paquilis Lamechondlapaloa. En mi lengua materna, náhuatl, les saludo. Yo soy Wenceslao Herrera, de México. Y también a nombre de mis compañeros diputados que aquí me acompañan, les damos un saludo muy cordial. Esta vez quiero, primeramente, reiterar mi agradecimiento al foro por haber incluido la participación de legisladores de América. Y en ese sentido traigo aquí un listado de recomendaciones que ha formulado el Parlamento Indígena de América. Este es un organismo continental permanente integrado por parlamentarios de nacionalidad indígena originarios elegidos democráticamente en cada uno de los países de América, fundado el 29 de agosto de 1987 en la ciudad de Panamá y ratificado últimamente en sus acciones y objetivos en México y Venezuela. En este sentido, exhortamos y proponemos a los Estados Nacionales lo siguiente: establecer como prioridad a corto plazo estrategias para garantizar la participación política y administrativa en los órganos de decisión, trabajar por el fortalecimiento de las estructuras sociales y políticas de los pueblos indígenas con el fin de eliminar la discriminación y desigualdades sociales,
formular convenios y acuerdos con nuestros pueblos indígenas para la preservación, conservación y restauración de nuestros territorios sagrados, promover planes y programas que prioricen procesos de educación culturalmente pertinentes y de calidad, garantizando la protección de sus lenguas, pedagogías y sistemas de transmisión de saberes y conocimientos tradicionales, e impulsar como normas legales y procesos educativos que propicien la interculturalidad en las sociedades nacionales. Reconocer a los pueblos indígenas y sus autoridades como sujetos de derecho público con personalidad jurídica propia. Garantizar el derecho a consulta previa y la concertación bajo el principio del consentimiento libre, previo e informado, y se creen mecanismos para su cumplimiento a la vez se limite o prohíba la presencia de empresas transnacionales mineras en nuestros territorios indígenas, pues solo han contaminado y enfermado a nuestra madre tierra, y las que están reparen de manera inmediata los daños causados. Demandamos también ante los organismos multilaterales, por violación sistemática y reiterada de los derechos y libertades fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas, un observatorio de vigilancia permanente para que trabajen por la protección de la vida, la cultura y el territorio. Asimismo, se integren mecanismos de vigilancia, seguimiento y cumplimiento en los estados nacionales. Firmamos dos integrantes de esta mesa directiva, su servidor y Ernesto Ramiro Estacio, de Colombia. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you very much, Wenceslao Herrera of the Parlamento Indígena de América. I'd like now, it's my pleasure to call now on Oren Lyons, who is speaking on behalf of the Onondaga Nation and the Seventh Generation Fund. Is Oren in the room? Yes, Oren Lyons, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A short item, agenda item 7, on future work of the permanent forum during and including emerging issues. Good afternoon, members of the permanent forum, Madam Chair, our indigenous sisters and brothers, and everyone in attendance. During the decades leading to the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in 2007, and during the 8 years of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the doctrine of discovery has been raised on numerous occasions by Indigenous Peoples representatives. For this reason, we are recommending that the Permanent Forum carry out a study of an international legal construct known as the doctrine of discovery, that has served and continues to serve as the foundation of the numerous violations of Indigenous peoples' human rights in Africa, Asia, and the Americas. And we further recommend that the Permanent Forum ask the North American Caucus to prepare a preliminary study of the Doctrine of Discovery to be submitted to the 9th session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in 2010. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Oren Lyons, and thank you for being present in the midst of this session. I really appreciate the fact that you as an elder has consistently been here giving support to the work of the Permanent Forum. Thank you very much, Oren Lyons. I'd like now to call... Yeah. I call now on Mildred Carreira, who is speaking on behalf of the Caribbean Indigenous Caucus for the Greater Caribbean. Is Mildred Carreira in the room? Yes, you have the floor, Madam.
Takahi, on behalf of the Caribbean Indigenous Peoples, represented at the 8th session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, our delegates continue to be concerned with the lack of support for the equitable participation of Caribbean Indigenous peoples within the forum sessions and its follow-up initiatives. We have continuously presented recommendations to the forum, which from the reports available for review have been largely ignored. While we commend the the Convention on Biological Diversity, UNICEF, and WIPO for their recent efforts to include Caribbean indigenous peoples in their programs. We have not seen this effort embraced by other members of the interagency support group. We therefore recommend that the forum advocate for the equitable inclusion of Caribbean indigenous peoples within the United Nations program to the interagency support group at all its future sessions and follow-up work, to ensure that voluntary fund and trust fund on indigenous issues relating to the second international decade of the world's indigenous people include the Caribbean indigenous representatives and organizations as beneficiaries to these initiatives, with the appointment of a Caribbean indigenous representative on the selection boards of these programs. We urge ECOSOC to expand the current representation on the forum to include a Caribbean indigenous representative. The current regional structure, South Central America and the Caribbean, is ineffective. Madam Chair and forum member and members of the forum, we also express our great concern for indigenous peoples who continue to suffer lack of recognition for their rights, political status, and very existence and identity as indigenous peoples. As noted by our relatives of the Project Access Global Capacity Training Group, many states fail to even recognize the existence of indigenous peoples in their borders. This is especially the case for indigenous peoples in non-self-governing territories. In solidarity with our Pacific relatives, we therefore recommend that the forum, in its ninth session, sponsor an expert seminar in conjunction with the CERD and the Special Committee on Decolonization to examine the impact of the United Nations decolonization process on indigenous peoples of the non-self-governing territories, which are now or have been listed on the United Nations list of non-self-governing territories. We also request that indigenous peoples of the non-self-governing territories and territories previously under the non-self-governing territories status be included. In its draft, General Comment Number 1 on Article 42 of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, Item 25, include a specific reference to indigenous peoples of non-self-governing territories, including Borinquen, the Free Associated State of Puerto Rico. Haho, Guaitiao. Thank you, relatives, for this opportunity to address the plenary today.
Thank you very much, Mildred Carrera, for the Caribbean Indigenous Caucus. I now call on Nyari Brown, who is going to speak on behalf of the Pacific Caucus. You have the floor, madam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brothers and sisters, I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and bring respects from my ancestors to the members and participants of the permanent forum. In the interests of time, this statement has already been handed in to the Secretariat, and I'll make a couple of comments before going straight to the recommendations. This intervention is focused on a proposal for future work to address the health and well-being of the world's Indigenous peoples, the roles and responsibilities of UN, World Health Organization and other related agencies, and consistent with the mandated areas of the Permanent Forum. It is not enough to assume the inclusion of Indigenous issues under various other contexts, such as vulnerable populations, women's health, refugees or minorities. We are distinct peoples with health issues intimately connected to our Indigenous identity, beliefs, experiences and expertise. And whilst social determinants describe the influence and impacts of education, employment, income and economic status on health, well-being and participation, in addition, we must promote discussion, research and action on the cultural determinants of health. These cultural determinants include sovereignty and self-determination, access to and utilisation of traditional lands, issues of identity, preservation of language and cultural integrity, that is, the protection and promotion of Indigenous law and positive traditional practices that are protective and facilitate improved resilience. The Pacific Caucus and the Australian IPO Network delegation make the following recommendations. One, that the World Health Organization be one of the agencies identified to engage in comprehensive dialogue with the Permanent Forum in 2010 and subsequent years to report on their work during the second decade of the world's Indigenous peoples. 2, that the Permanent Forum, ECOSOC and Member States engage with the World Health Assembly, the international agency which determines the direction and mandate of WHO, to develop a comprehensive, integrated global agenda addressing the health of the world's Indigenous peoples. 3, that the Permanent Forum suggests WHO mandate their regional offices to engage with or continue to engage with Member States to develop initiatives specific to the health of Indigenous peoples in their region. 4, the WHO, their regional offices and UN agencies develop themed reports specific to Indigenous health. These agencies should draw on the extensive collective expertise and networks of the Permanent Forum and participants to progress this work. And 5, that the Permanent Forum facilitate research and action on the cultural determinants of health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nyari Brown. I now call on Brian Wyatt, who will speak on behalf of the National Native Title Council, Aboriginal Legal Rights Movement, and other organizations in Australia. You have the floor, Mr. Wyatt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a joint statement on behalf of the Pacific Caucus and the Indigenous Peoples Organisation Network of Australia. This intervention is made on behalf of a number of Indigenous people of the Pacific region present at this forum. And I'll go through the recommendations first and then go in little detail to some of them, time permitting. The first recommendation is to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should recommend to the UN Human Rights Council the creation of a United States Special Rapporteur on climate change and human rights focusing on climate justice. 2, the UNPFII should recommend the UN Human Rights Council members call for a special session to deal with climate change. 3, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should recommend an official UN Day on Climate Justice to be commemorated on October 1 and explore the elaboration and creation of a decade. Recommendation 4, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should sponsor a series of expert workshops on climate change and human rights called On the Front Lines of Cultural Survival. 5, the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should recommend to the newly created expert mechanism on the human rights of Indigenous peoples to continue and update the collection of the questionnaire created by the former UN Working Group on Indigenous Peoples and build on the studies by many Indigenous experts throughout the Pacific region. And 6, the United Nations Permanent Forum should recommend immediate action. Immediate action to provide infrastructure to safeguard people living in low-lying islands in the Pacific. Now, I'll briefly explain in some detail some of these recommendations. The creation of a new UN Special Rapporteur on Climate Change and Human Rights would be an important international mechanism for Indigenous peoples in the Arctic and the Pacific, as well as the 5 other regions. The UN Special Rapporteur on Climate Change and Human Rights would be able to visit firsthand to see people facing the impacts of climate change and its impact to deny the realisation of human rights. The UN Special Rapporteur on Climate Change and Human Rights would be able to do 2 missions each year to speak with Indigenous peoples, NGOs, national human rights institutions, governments attempting to survive climate change. The UN Human Rights Council has been willing to hold special sessions to focus on important issues of the day dealing with human rights. Already in its first 2 years, the Human Rights Council has called for special sessions than in the nearly previous 6 decades of the UN Commission on Human Rights. The special session will bring together the 47 members of the UN Human Rights Council to focus on this important issue. The special session could also add to the important meetings of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, final meeting in Copenhagen in December 2009. The commemoration of a UN Day on Climate Change on climate justice would be a catalyst to wake up the world so that people would have to live with due to the climate change on a daily basis and what some of the looming challenges that will make it even more difficult on an ever-increasing level. The idea behind October 1 is the National Day of Independence of Tuvalu, where it became a member of the family of nations. While it is now free, what will its future be if its land base disappears? The disappearance of a country will be a unique issue the world will have to deal with. More importantly, the issue of climate justice is crucial as more countries will have to face such challenges to their very survival. With that, Madam Chair, we thank you and we provide the recommendations from the Pacific Caucus and the Indigenous Peoples Organisation Network of Australia. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian Wyatt, for the Pacific Caucus and the various organisations in Australia. I now call on Ben Oli Koisaba, who is going to speak on behalf of the African Caucus. Is Ben Koisaba in the room? No? Okay, let's move on to Saudata Abubakrin from the Francophone Caucus. Yes, you have the floor. You say your name because Saudata. Oh, no, there's Saudata. Yeah.
Madam. Oui.
You, okay.
Alors, je. Oui, merci, Madame la Présidente. Je m'appelle Zahra Bougrine, Saoudata m'a déléguée pour parler à sa place. Concernant les travaux futurs de l'instance permanente et les questions nouvelles, la coordination autochtone francophone propose à l'instance permanente dans le cadre de la promotion de la mise en œuvre de la Déclaration sur les droits des peuples autochtones, d'encourager les États membres à commencer l'application de la Déclaration, de demander aux États membres dont les peuples autochtones sont en danger, d'accueillir le rapporteur spécial, notamment dans les régions du conflit, comme le Mali, le Niger, l'Algérie, afin d'instaurer la paix et de préserver la vie de ces peuples. Réserver un fonds spécial pour la traduction de la déclaration en langue autochtone. Réserver une aide financière aux réunions régions des organisations internationales des peuples autochtones comme l'IPAC de l'Afrique, et de la coordination autochtone francophone et autres. De demander au gouvernement d'inclure dans les programmes de l'enseignement primaire et secondaire une discipline pour la préservation de l'environnement afin de sensibiliser nos enfants des problèmes du changement climatique. On propose pour le thème de la prochaine session les peuples autochtones et le partenariat au pouvoir. Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on Sylvia Iskar-Sega from the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. You have the floor, Madam.
Honorable Chairwoman, members of the UN Permanent Forum, distinguished representatives of Indigenous peoples, sisters and brothers here today, the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus has requested that I read this statement on their behalf. I will respectfully deliver only the recommendations for future work as the full document is available to you. One, we commend the Permanent Forum's numerous calls to respect, implement, and guarantee the right to free, prior, and informed consent. We underscore the critical need for the full and equal participation of Indigenous women in these efforts. We therefore recommend that the Permanent Forum urge states, transnational corporations, and intergovernmental banks to ensure that free, prior, and informed consent is sought with the full and effective participation of Indigenous women on an equal basis, as well as the participation of all marginalized groups in Indigenous communities. Two, we strongly urge the Permanent Forum to set traditional Indigenous knowledge, including the revitalization of Indigenous languages, as a future main theme for its work. Three, we recommend that the Permanent Forum undertake a study on the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in the protection of traditional Indigenous knowledge. Four, we recommend that the Permanent Forum recommend the establishment of an international year for traditional Indigenous knowledge. Five, we recommend that the Permanent Forum initiate a gender-based analysis of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in consultation and collaboration with Indigenous women at the local level. Any human rights process that considers the needs of Indigenous women must be mindful of our specific customary laws, traditional beliefs and practices, and historical circumstances, as well as our specific experiences of discrimination and marginalization. We recommend that the Permanent Forum undertake a gender-based analysis to set the framework for all states as they implement the declaration. Six, given the ongoing criminalization of indigenous cultural traditions in some places, we recommend that the Permanent Forum study ways for the establishment of a mechanism to address violations on the right to maintain and preserve indigenous cultures. Seven, we recommend that the Permanent Forum undertake a study on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of unrecognized or unrepresented indigenous peoples. Historically known peoples who are unrecognized and or unrepresented within states have no access to remedies of collective or tribal rights. This undermines the stability of indigenous women and children who carry their traditions and are unable to practice them without being criminalized. Eight, we recommend that the Permanent Forum set traditional indigenous justice systems as a future agenda into the UN Permanent Forum. Nine, we commend the Permanent Forum's call to the UNDP to convene an international expert workshop on indigenous peoples and health with a special emphasis on sexual and reproductive health. In preparation for this workshop, we recommend that the Permanent Forum prepare studies of best practices on traditional indigenous medicinal and healing systems. 10, we also note the importance of continued support for the Indigenous Task Force at the International Diabetes Federation and the Stop TB Partnership. 11, we commend the Permanent Forum's recommendations for studying the situation of Indigenous women migrants and the loss of their rights as they migrate. For this study, we recommend the Permanent Forum to produce studies and requests from all UN bodies and agencies disaggregated data on indigenous migration. We also request a gender-based analysis be completed in all reports that are produced. 12, we call upon the Permanent Forum to implement and prioritize its recommendations regarding decolonization. 13, we request that the Permanent Forum initiate an expert study and dialogue on transborder indigenous communities. And number 14, we commend the Permanent Forum's decision to organize an international expert group meeting on indigenous people's development with culture and identity. Given that indigenous women played a very important role in carrying out our community's self-determining development, we urge the Permanent Forum to include the full and effective participation of indigenous women in this meeting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Ms. Sylvia Escarcega from the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. I'd just like to make a correction on the one of your recommendations. It's the UNFPA that's being asked to help organize the workshop on reproductive health. Yeah. Okay, I'd like to ask our secretary to please make an announcement before I call the next speaker.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to kindly remind the participants of forum that you can inscribe to make the statements. You can have the statements given us here to the podium, but you cannot distribute them without making the statement. All you can do, you can have them outside of the room, but please refrain from distributing anything. Anything that is to be distributed is only the statement which is to be delivered. That means that you are inscribed on the list and you expect to be given the floor. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I would like now to call on Angel Vera Sales from the Federación de Asociaciones de Comunidades Guaraníes de la Región Oriental de Paraguay. Is he here? Yes.
Gracias, Presidenta. En nombre y representación de la Federación Guaraní, me dirijo a todos ustedes. Y en especial, valoro mucho y admiro los trabajos que está emprendiendo el Foro Permanente en favor de todos nosotros. Así también felicito a todos los líderes y la lideraza de las mujeres indígenas. Todos ustedes son capaces. Con todos ustedes contamos con numerosas capacidades humanas. Mi congratulación a todos ustedes y espero que este foro siga en adelante. Quisiera dejar como comentario El foro para nosotros en Paraguay es una cosa nueva. En Paraguay habíamos escuchado comentarios sobre este foro permanente, pero no sabíamos los fines de esta organización, ni tampoco quiénes son los componentes de esta red. Ahora lo hemos visto por nuestros propios ojos y hemos recogido muchas informaciones que vale la pena, las cuales llevaremos a nuestras organizaciones, a las comunidades de base. Cabe mencionar que tenemos interés de seguir los procesos de este foro. Yendo a nuestras obligaciones como representantes, veo que todos tenemos que luchar en nuestra base. En cada uno de nuestros países tenemos que buscar conexiones con nuestras autoridades, demostrando interés en llegar a nuestro desarrollo social basado por nuestras pluralidades culturales. La meta a seguir, todos nosotros tenemos que exigir a los estados de la creación de una política pública clara para nuestro pueblo, desde la visión nuestra. A la vez, mis felicitaciones a los hermanos indígenas de Bolivia y Ecuador por los logros obtenidos. Aprovechando esta magnífica oportunidad de dirigirme a todos ustedes, solicito al foro permanente y a todos ustedes a que dictaminen al Estado paraguayo una recomendación para que tengan en cuenta dentro del presupuesto un fondo equitativo anualmente para los pagos de tierra indígena en cumplimiento de sus obligaciones como pueblos. Sin asegurar tierra, ¿para qué vamos a hablar de un posible desarrollo sostenible en nuestras comunidades de base? Ni del medio ambiente, cambio climático y otros. En Paraguay contamos con 480 comunidades aproximadamente y el 50% de estas comunidades no está asegurado, no tiene título. Y el Estado hace años atrás no tenía más en cuenta dentro de su presupuesto un fondo para adquisición de tierra a comunidades indígenas. Por tal motivo, solicito el acompañamiento de este foro. Reitero nuestras recomendaciones a este foro en el tema de la ley que hemos provisto el pasado semana a través de Hipólito Acevedo, la cual me refiero de la ley de plaguicida y agrotóxico. Hoy día nos amanecimos con una sorpresa. La mencionada ley ya está promulgada por los legisladores de nuestro país y esperamos que sea pronta las recomendaciones al Poder Ejecutivo para que se vete esta ley. Además, solicito a este foro que recomiende a la Corte Suprema de Justicia de Paraguay que haga valer los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en la toma de decisión jurídica y en la aplicación de la justicia no sea discriminada hacia los pueblos indígenas. Varias denuncias quedó impune en violaciones de derechos humanos y en conflicto de tierras, especialmente casos indígenas. Yo creo, en cuanto a las violaciones de nuestros derechos, estamos todos iguales en todos los países del mundo. Luchemos todos juntos y lograremos nuestros objetivos. Desde ya agradezco por todo a este espacio y espero que el Creador Supremo bendiga a todos ustedes y muchas gracias por este espacio.
I'd like to thank Mr. Angel Vera Sales from the Federación de Asociaciones de Comunidades Guaraníes de la Región Oriental de Paraguay. As I mentioned when his colleague Hippolytus spoke, this is the first time that we get representatives, legitimate representatives of the indigenous peoples from Paraguay. And this is one of the direct results of the fact-finding mission that the forum has done in Paraguay, because we convinced the UNDP that they should support them to come and participate in our session
and bring the issues that they are very much concerned about to the attention of the forum. So thank you very much for coming and also for contributing to the discussions under this agenda item. I'd like now to call on Latifa Douche, who is going to speak on behalf of the Amasig Caucus, Amasir Caucus. Yes, you have the floor, madam.
C'était pas le maire avant. Azul, merci Madame la Présidente. Concernant les travaux futurs, le caucus Amazigh tient à rappeler que la situation des droits Amazigh en Afrique du Nord sont bafoués, malgré les quelques actions positives au Maroc après la constitution de l'Institut Amazigh depuis 2002. Le gouvernement actuel ne réserve aucun intérêt à ses engagements envers la promotion de Tamazirt. La même situation en Algérie, en Tunisie et la Libye. En Libye, c'est la négation totale. En pays Touareg, c'est le génocide et la purification encadrés par les gouvernements de Mali et de Niger lors de ces derniers événements. Alors, devant cette situation, le caucus demande à l'instance permanente d'engager les États de la région, de commencer l'application immédiate de la déclaration afin de débloquer la situation critique des Amazigh. Demande aussi à l'instance permanente, afin qu'il intervienne auprès des États, d'accueillir le rapporteur spécial des Nations Unies sur les peuples autochtones, de demander à la justice internationale de juger les responsables des crimes dans la région d'Algérie, Mali et Niger, d'inciter les États membres à élaborer une législation nationale conforme aux lois internationales, demande à l'instance permanente d'intervenir en tant que médiateur entre les représentants des peuples autochtones et le gouvernement dans des situations d'urgence afin de préserver la paix et la survie des peuples autochtones. Merci. Nous avons ainsi représenté nos recommandations pour ne pas être répétitifs. Merci.
Thank you very much of that message from Amazigh concerning the genocide to the people. And I'm sure the use of the UNDRIP is one of the best tools that can promote the rights of indigenous peoples. Speaker in the list is... our next speaker in the list is Mario Valdez, Comissão Nacional de Tare Guarani from Brazil. Could you please take the floor?
Yes, could you speak slowly?
And speak slowly for the translator. Thank you.
Gracias, señora Presidente. Voy a hablar en nombre de cuatro organizaciones nacionales de Brasil, Paraguay y Argentina. Los pueblos indígenas, habitantes originarios de Argentina, Paraguay y Brasil, siguen resistiendo los saqueos sistemáticos de los territorios indígenas y sus recursos naturales. Los estados reconocen los derechos de los pueblos indígenas a través de la Constitución Nacional y nacionales, leyes internas y firmas, ratificaciones de convenciones y tratados internacionales como el Convenio 169 de la OIT. Pero al mismo tiempo niegan, excluyen y no respetan sus obligaciones contraídas en los escenarios internacionales. A pesar del reconocimiento formal de derechos y de su expresión positiva en las legislaciones internas de cada Estado, estos derechos no se cumplen por falta de voluntad política, afectando asimismo el acceso y el derecho a la tierra y territorio. Los proyectos de desarrollo de las industrias extractivas que se llevan adelante sin nuestro consentimiento libre, previo e informado, ni las consultas y participación de los pueblos indígenas. En estas regiones existe una gran dimensión de la emergencia sanitaria y alimentaria, donde la salud está minada por la desnutrición, la tuberculosis y el Chagas, que provocan un genocidio lento que afecta la existencia vital de nuestros pueblos. Estas regiones desde hace siglos vienen padeciendo los saqueos de los recursos naturales que en las últimas décadas desaparecen bajo las topadoras, depredando nuestros bosques, sometiendo nuestro hábitat al fuego de quienes buscan la alta rentabilidad de los monocultivos transgénicos y otros emprendimientos extractivos contaminando las aguas y sus recursos. Señora Presidente, los pueblos indígenas, en especial los pueblos de Argentina, se hallan resistiendo las acciones violentas de los gobiernos, tanto del Estado Nacional como de los gobiernos provinciales que se confabulan con los intereses privados mediante amedrentamiento, amenaza de muerte, persecuciones policiales, procesamiento y encarcelación a sus líderes comunitarios. Más a las invasiones a sus territorios, pretende despojarlos de sus tierras tradicionales. Ante la situación planteada que pone de manifiesto los deterioros implacables de los recursos naturales y por esa vía los pueblos indígenas de la región del sur, solicitamos y recomendamos al Foro Permanente tome en cuenta las siguientes consideraciones. Que inste al Estado, a los Estados de nuestra región, a que den estricto cumplimiento de los derechos consagrados en el artículo 26, en sus tres incisos de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, y que este cumplimiento de los compromisos asumidos sea desarrollada de manera urgente y operativa para la aplicación de los principios universales de la libre determinación de los pueblos y el consentimiento libre previo informado. Recomendamos al Foro Permanente para las cuestiones indígenas y al relator especial recabe por los canales pertinentes informes periódicos y circunstanciados que deberán ser solicitados a los Estados partes para determinar los avances al respeto de las políticas que se permitan el reconocimiento y el respeto de las propiedades comunitarias, la recuperación de tierras, territorios ancestrales y lo de sus recursos naturales, ello en virtud de la preocupación manifiesta en el preámbulo de la declaración. Al enfatizar el respeto a la injusticia histórica como resultado de la colonización y de haber sido despojado de nuestras tierras y territorios y recursos naturales, que por efecto de los desplazamientos forzados de nuestras comunidades, la constante degradación y aniquilamiento de nuestros recursos naturales en nuestro territorio, se garanticen a nuestros pueblos el acceso a las tierras aptas y suficientes para nuestro desarrollo económico, social, político y cultural y espiritual, siempre bajo la primacía de la libre determinación de los pueblos y el nuestro consentimiento libre previo informado. Se generen las instancias pertinentes para la elaboración y cumplimiento real de reglas y directrices claras y concretas dirigidas a los estados de la región y las compañías extractivas que operen en nuestro territorio para la reposición urgente de los recursos y para la reparación integral de los daños generados a nuestro territorio. Por último, señora Presidenta, honorable miembro del Foro Permanente, que se elabore para su efectivo cumplimiento reglas y directrices al que deberán sujetarse los Estados partes y los otros actores institucionales privados que garanticen el pleno respeto y efectivo ejercicio de nuestra voluntad bajo el consentimiento libre, previo e informado. Señora Presidenta, honorables miembros del foro permanente en nuestro territorio están nuestros alimentos, medicina, educación, cultura y conocimiento ancestral. No declamamos, sino que exigimos respeto. Gracias, señora Presidenta.
Thank you very much, Mario, for speaking on behalf of three big organizations of Brazil, Paraguay, and Argentina. The next speaker is Kenneth Deer from Indigenous World Association, Indigenous Network on Economics and Trade, Native Women's Association of Canada. Please, could you take the floor?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The Durban Review Conference ended just a month ago with significant references to Indigenous peoples in its outcome document. Although the conference was boycotted by 10 states and was shrouded with controversy, nevertheless, there were gains for Indigenous peoples, which the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues should take into account in its future work. There are four paragraphs that mention Indigenous peoples, 70 to 73. The paragraphs dealt with the elimination of barriers to political, economic, social, and cultural spheres of society, and to grant special attention to the situation of Indigenous women and employment. One paragraph mentions tackling the violence experienced by Indigenous youth in urban situations. Another encourages special measures, including affirmative or positive measures and strategies or actions, as well as new investments in health care, public health, education, employment, electricity, drinking water, and environmental control to communities of Indigenous peoples. But the most important paragraph is 73, which welcomes the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This is critical because the Durban Declaration in 2001 states we declare that the use of the term Indigenous peoples in the Declaration and Program of Action cannot be construed of having any implications as to rights under international law. This paragraph in 2001 discriminated against Indigenous peoples by treating Indigenous peoples different from other peoples. That paragraph is now redundant by the passage of the Durban Review Conference with paragraph 73, which welcomes the adoption of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. It recognizes Indigenous peoples as peoples and encourages its use to combat racism against Indigenous peoples. This significant advancement should not go unrecognized. Indigenous peoples and the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues must use the Durban Outcome Document to build momentum in the fight against racism. There is no need for anyone to detail the racism that we face every day or to review the roots of where that racism stems from in this intervention. We know the issue all too well. We would like to propose to the Permanent Forum that since the Durban Review Conference welcomed the adoption of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and also said that it should be used to combat racism against Indigenous peoples, the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues decides to hold a half-day session on the theme of addressing racism against Indigenous peoples and the Durban Plan of Action. This session will be held during the 2011 meeting of the Permanent Forum. We hope that the Permanent Forum members give this recommendation serious consideration. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Kenneth, for that constructive presentation. I hope your suggestions will be taken into consideration by the forum. Our next speaker in the list is Miral Taripuna, Asian Caucus. Please, could you take the floor?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I make the following recommendations on behalf of the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus. Number one, we think that the innovations in this session's agenda were very effective. We particularly appreciate the agenda items on the implementation of UNDRIP, the dialogue with the Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights and fundamental freedoms of Indigenous peoples, and the comprehensive dialogue with six other UN agencies and funds. We recommend that these items be placed on the permanent agenda of the UNPF. Number two, we felt that the time allotted for the comprehensive dialogue with the UN agencies and funds was too short. We recommend that the time for each UN agency be increased from 2 hours to 3 hours. This is important for us to understand better the work of the agencies and to increase their accountability in policies and projects affecting Indigenous peoples. Number three, this year's focus on Article 42 of UNDRIP is an important step in moving towards universal acceptance and implementation of the Declaration. We feel that each of the articles of the UNDRIP should be given similar attention and recommend that next year's session focus on Article 26 to 30 of the UNDRIP. Number four, we commend the states who have reported on the status of implementation of the UNDRIP within their countries, and we urge other countries to do the same. Now I would like to pass the microphone to my colleague, Georgi Carino, who will put some other recommendations for the future work of the UNPF. Thank you, Madam.
Madam Chairperson, we wish to bring two additional recommendations to your attention. We recommend that the UN Permanent Forum, beginning at its ninth session, organize a learning center modeled on the experience of the UN Commission on Sustainable Development. This is to maximize the knowledge and expertise present during the forum, as well as the presence of many participants to the UNPFII sessions, for educational sessions, which will not be limited to the 3-minute statements or short presentations during side events. but rather parallel to the UN Permanent Forum meetings. A learning center will provide the opportunity to organize educational sessions of 3-hour duration conducted by indigenous organizations, UN agencies, governments, or other interested bodies. For example, next year is the International Year for Biodiversity. A learning center could focus on educational sessions, highlighting traditional knowledge, ecosystem approaches, indigenous people's role in customary resource management, and sustainable use of biodiversity. The only need is for the UN Permanent Forum to provide a dedicated room for the learning center and to help organize the sessions in collaboration with interested organizations. Second, we wish to raise the matter of a standard of conduct for experts of the UN Permanent Forum who must at all times uphold the rights of indigenous peoples. This morning, under Agenda Item 4, the Cordillera People's Alliance made a statement on human rights with significant bearing on the reputation and future work of the UN Permanent Forum. The statement lays before the Permanent Forum a serious case of dispossession of lands of the Cariño clan of the indigenous Ibaloy people in Baguio City, Philippines, with the final responsibility of the chairman of the National Commission of Indigenous Peoples of the Philippines, the UN Permanent Forum expert chosen by the Asian governments to the UN Permanent Forum. Given that the NCIP is the body charged with the protection and promotion of the rights of indigenous peoples in the Philippines, and given the serious procedural and substantive failings in the application of the Philippine Indigenous Peoples Rights Act in this case, a member of the forum will become the subject of campaigns and court cases filed domestically and in international human rights tribunals to seek justice and redress for this serious violation of land rights. I bring this matter to the permanent attention of the Permanent Forum, and we seek some action on these issues. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Information received from the Asian Caucus. We've taken your suggestions into consideration, especially the time which was allocated to the UN agencies. It was a very good dialogue, and I'm sure the forum is going to reconsider. And other issues containing the conduct of the Permanent Forum member, I think the forum has also noted that. Thank you. The next speaker in the list is Dolores Chatas, Friends of the Coachella Indigenous Network on Economic and Trade. Please, could you take the floor?
Madam Chair, esteemed members of this forum, brothers and sisters of the world indigenous community, thank you for the opportunity to allow the Friends of the Coachella to address the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. I would like to bring to the attention of this forum the way the rights of the Indigenous peoples of the BC Interior are being violated by the Canadian and provincial governments. The Coachella Mountains are considered to be the foremost hunting, berry picking, medicine gathering, and intensely spiritual land of the Iklaqkamak and Okanagan nations, and has been since time immemorial. The Coachella Mountains are being considered by corporate interests for a multi-million dollar ski resort with an application to the Environmental Assessment Office of BC for controlled access of 22,500 hectares of land in the Coachella. Protocol. There needs to be respect and proper protocol in regards to lands being developed in our territory. The proponent gets the first contact with the province, and then we as First Nations are consulted about what the multi-million dollar investors have picked out on a map in our traditional territories. First Nations in the BC Interior have been impoverished by federal and provincial laws for 150 years. The federal and provincial governments have done nothing in support of Delgamuukw or the Williams cases, landmark cases in BC on Aboriginal right and title. The Indian people of the BC Interior have never signed treaties because land claim policies, as they stand right now, require the extinguishment of Aboriginal right and title. Aboriginal title is a unique property right. A number of court decisions from the Supreme Court of Canada directly reference Aboriginal right and title. Our Aboriginal title, like other types of Aboriginal rights, is protected under Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution. Our Aboriginal title lands can only be surrendered to the Federal Crown. The government is trying to create dissent by encouraging support amongst a select few of the Iklaqkamak. The large majority of the Iklaqkamak Nation are opposed to the resort. Indigenous people have the right to own, use, develop, and control the lands, territories, and resources that they possess by reason of traditional ownership, use, and occupation. The animals have a right to their range. Grizzly bear, wolverine, and gray wolf are the most fierce animals. They also habitat the Coquihalla. Where will they go if they are pushed out of these lands? Resolution of land claims that are now 150 years old call for Canada to bring honour to the land claim process. Canada cannot proceed without free and prior consent. We do not want a multi-million-dollar ski resort in the Coquihalla. The Friends of the Coquihalla, a grassroots initiative of the Intilkutmuk and Okanagan nations, also support our sister nations of the BC Interior. The Shkwemek and their endeavour to stop the expansion of Sun Peaks Resort with Shkwakwakwilt, and the Statlium Nation and the Shutaka Camp to stop the resort at Cayouche Creek. Our recommendations are: we urge that the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues advocate for Canada to change their laws surrounding the rights and titles of the BC Interior First Nations. What we need is a respectful process that establishes the legal obligations of all parties as the parameters for constructive dialogue. We ask that the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues urge Canada to implement the rights of Indigenous peoples for the protection of the Coquihalla Mountains for the Intilkutmuk and Okanagan Nations, and for the above-mentioned mountains for our sister nations of the BC Interior. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dolores, for that good statement. The next speaker in the list is Somalin Touch, Kamacha Koran Federation. Please, could you take the floor? Thank you.
Madam Chair, the future work of the UNPFII is essential to our existence. The Permanent Forum is an important space for Indigenous peoples of Asia to raise their rights and stand in solidarity for a sustainable development that respects our cultural heritage. We have appreciated the new developments in the review process initiated this year with the UN specialized agencies thoroughly presenting their commitment to Indigenous peoples. The emerging dialogue is and will continue to be very important in the future session of the Permanent Forum. We would like to suggest the following recommendations. Ask the Permanent Forum help to set up a half-day discussion to possible mechanisms for the recognition of unrecognized and represented peoples that are not respected by their governments. We seek the forum to set a commission for the recognition of Indigenous people which should be invited by the Vietnamese government. We request that Vietnam to have an open dialogue with our KKF as a first step. Request the help of the forum members and Madam Chair to set up a series of meetings with KKF, Montagnard Foundation, and the Vietnamese government so that we may begin the process of identifying our Indigenous peoples in their respective areas. Only through such dialogue can the needs of our Indigenous peoples become visible and the achievement of the MDGs become a collaborative. Urge Vietnam to work in collaboration with specialized agencies such as UNESCO and UNDP to help translate and UNDRIP into the Khmer and Vietnamese languages and distribute to our people on the ground. Reaffirm the need for a collaborative approach to create a national plan of action, which includes a legal framework to recognize the Khmer Ground people as the Indigenous peoples of the Mekong Delta region. We are the Indigenous peoples of the Mekong Delta. Our parents were forced to flee Vietnam because of the discriminatory system created against our people on basis of our identity and unique culture. I want nothing more but to live in my homeland as my ancestors have been speaking our Indigenous language and practicing our unique cultural heritage. I'm sorry. Madam Chair, we strongly believe that it is time that Vietnam move beyond the denial of our right to speak at this permanent forum and put into practice the right to freedom of expression as guaranteed by its very own constitution and the UNDRIP. We ask that Vietnam open their minds as well as their hearts and embrace the spirit of working in partnership so that we can work together to better the lives of the Khmer Ground peoples. With the world as our witness, I stand up for our voiceless women at home to lead by example and extend our hand of friendship, reconciliation, and peace in the hope that we can finally live together in a culture of human rights. Will Vietnam make history today and accept our hand of trust? Let's shake as young women of Southeast Asia for a future of freedom, respect, and equality for all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Solnam. We are together with you as indigenous peoples, and we know self-identity is one of the crucial, important issues that we hope to have as indigenous peoples. The next speaker in our list is Oscar Pila, Shamanin Whiteface, Pritox Nation Crete Council. Could you take the floor, please? Go ahead.
We representatives of the Tetuan Oriate, Teton Sioux Nation of the Great Sioux Nation, Teton Sioux Nation Treaty Council, have been attending the sessions of the Permanent Forum since the first session. This statement is jointly made with the Ojibways Nation, our northern neighbors. We come as representatives of nations, not organizations. The following are the recommendations from the Teton Sioux Nation and the Ojibways Nation, all who are located in North Central North America. Number one, we strongly recommend that an international body be established with enforcement powers to mediate situations between indigenous nations and colonizing states. We support the similar statement made last week by the Greek representative, Madam Erica Irene Dias. In many cases, international treaties were made between indigenous nations and colonizing states when the colonizing states were emerging from infancy, while our nations were already ancient, strong nations. Unscrupulous behavior in most instances led to the occupation of land areas that were guaranteed in the treaties for the sole use of the indigenous nation. Such occupation, accompanied with forced assimilation, has created situations of genocide. Without an intermediary to intervene on behalf of indigenous nations such as ours, then genocide is inevitable. To allow such situations to happen is anathema to the purposes and goals of the United Nations. Number two, we strongly recommend that the United Nations agencies, such as the Special Rapporteur on Toxic Waste, and agencies associated with biological diversity and environmental protection and restoration, conduct studies on the impacts of uranium mining in all parts of the world. Most uranium mining is usually in areas occupied by or near indigenous nations. The 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty territory, which is located in the middle of the North American continent, must be included in such a study. This region is one of the highest producers of agricultural products that are shipped throughout the world. However, it is also an area that contains more than 1,000 abandoned open-pit uranium mines and prospects. Some of these mines are as large as 1 square mile. There are also more than 10,000 uncapped, unmarked, and unfilled uranium exploratory wells in the same region, which have already been proven to cross-contaminate the aquifers. We call this region that was the land area demarcated in the 1868 treaty America's secret Chernobyl, as the amount of radioactive pollution that has come out of there in the last 40 years would surpass the amounts emitted at the Chernobyl nuclear accident 21 years ago. Plans are currently proceeding to begin uranium mining in this area again, and there are still active mines. The indigenous people of the Great Sioux Nation who live in this area, as well as American citizens, are significantly affected with cancer, birth defects, and other diseases caused by radioactive poisoning. The United States government has been completely aware of this disastrous situation for the past 40 years, but has done nothing to stop it. This is a form of genocide of the Great Sioux Nation. Furthermore, the radioactive pollution impacts all of the agricultural products sent throughout the world, which subsequently affect end users, or all the people who receive agricultural products from the upper Midwest region of the United States. It is also possible that the Gulf of Mexico is being polluted by radioactive residue carried down the Missouri and Mississippi rivers from these old abandoned uranium mines. Number three, we recommend that a study be implemented by the World Health Organization on the health effects of indigenous peoples throughout the world caused by radioactive poisoning from uranium mining. Such a study must also include the indigenous nations in North America, particularly the Great Sioux Nation located in the northern Great Plains. Our recommendations are also supported by the Lipan Apache Women's Defense, our neighbors to the south. Thank you very much for considering our recommendations. Wopi Latanka, Zumila Wobaga Imachi Apie. My name is a little wise one that makes a mark. I am Charmaine Whiteface, spokesperson for the Tituan Oyate, Teton Sioux Nation Treaty Council.
Thank you very much, Charmaine Whiteface, for those constructive ideas. The next speaker in our list is Ali Shamatu, African Caucus. Please, could you take the floor?
Thank you, Madam Chair. From the armed conflicts in Niger, Sudan, and Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo to the increasing loss of indigenous land in Tanzania, Kenya, Chad, Nigeria, and elsewhere, the human rights situation of indigenous people in Africa continues to worsen. In 2003, the African Commission on Human and People's Rights adopted an important resolution calling African states to recognize indigenous people and their collective rights of self-determination. This was enhanced by the 2007 decision on declaration on the United Nations Human Rights decision on the United Nations Human Rights Council and the UN General Assembly in the passage of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. However, these instruments, which were very important, are not touching the situation of indigenous people on the ground in Africa. The situation remains critical due to unwillingness of African states to formally recognize the identity of indigenous people and the systematic discrimination they face under current constitutional and legal systems. Indigenous culture and language systems are marginalized from formal education. Our languages are not taught in schools, and indigenous cultures are not respected by the school system. It is shaving off schools, which discourages Mororo pastoralist children from schooling. Most indigenous people live in forests, desert, lakes, and mountain districts, which are marginalized economically and in terms of governance or access to justice. African governments are selling off indigenous land to foreign multinational companies for logging, mining, petrol, and other extractive industries without benefit to indigenous people, without consent, and with high levels of corruption, which means that the profit do not benefit the nation as a whole. Madam Chair, when you look around the room here, the United Nations headquarters in New York City, you will see very few African states present. As a senior legal advisor to the African group said to the U, to us in 2006, human rights is for Geneva. Here in New York, the issue is about power. The UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues has to engage more effectively with the regional and national levels if it is going to truly improve the situation of indigenous people where they live. Madam Chair, we as indigenous nations and people of Africa have in the past reiterated the need to for prior and informed consent on extractive and other industry. This has continued unabated and unfortunately with the support of the World Bank. Recommendations. The African Caucus reminds the Permanent Forum and African State that this event in New York was designed to facilitate a three-way dialogue on the implementation of rights and equitable development at national level. To achieve this, the African States need to be present here at the meeting. The African Caucus asks the Permanent Forum to support us in the following actions. Remind African states in writing of their obligation to implement the 2007 Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. We ask you to give special attention to those states making progress, namely the Republic of Burundi and the Republic of Congo. The UN Permanent Forum Secretariat should meet with individual African diplomatic legations to the United Nations and ask them what they think of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and what would encourage them to be more involved in the work of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Encourage UNDP and the Office of the High Commissioner on Human Rights to create national reference committees to review the impact of UN agencies on the rights of indigenous people at national level. This committee should include the right of indigenous. This committee should include state representatives, indigenous representatives, and UN agencies. Please refer to our recommendation of 2007. Encourage African states to constitutionally recognize the identities and languages of indigenous people so that indigenous youth can be proud of their identity. Establish education that involves indigenous elders and builds on indigenous knowledge and culture from early primary school up to university levels and create framework for indigenous language education. Support the use of indigenous languages in the media as well as in the African courts. The United Nations Permanent Forum to get a day during the next session of the forum to discuss the impact of extractive industry on indigenous people. Request the United Nations Permanent Forum to designate one of its members as focal point or rapporteur on the African Commission on Human and People's Rights for the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to monitor the harmonization of regulations between the African Commissions and the African Court. United Nations Permanent Forum to come to Africa and hold a dialogue with African National Human Rights Commissions and diplomats. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ali, for that constructive ideas. I hope the forum is going to take them seriously. The next speaker in our list is Oscar Pila Mozakwi, Pibalo Kweshe Salaska. Could you please take the floor?
Buenas tardes, hermanos, hermanas. Soy del pueblo Quichua Salasaca, Ecuador, en la cual he desempeñado como gobernador del pueblo Salasaca. Señora Presidenta, como es la primera vez que hago uso de la palabra, me permito felicitarle por su designación y a la vez manifestarle lo siguiente. En mi país, Ecuador, a pesar de que los derechos de los pueblos indígenas han sido reconocidos en la Constitución Política del Estado, aún falta mucho por hacer. Implementar estos derechos es una tarea que no se resuelve con algunas reuniones en donde se socializa la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, aprobado en septiembre del 2007 por la Asamblea General. Si bien es cierto, la difusión de la declaración ha contado con el apoyo del Grupo de Trabajo Interinstitucional sobre la Interculturalidad del Sistema de Naciones Unidas en Ecuador. Sin embargo, no se debe quedar en una socialización dirigida solo a los líderes de la organización indígena, como se indica en el informe presentado por el Gobierno del Estado Ecuador para el octavo periodo de sesiones del Foro Permanente. Es urgente que el instrumento internacional sea difundida, no solo con la impresión de cientos de ejemplares en distintos idiomas indígenas, sino es necesario que las organizaciones y pueblos indígenas contemos con la cooperación financiera y la asistencia técnica del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas y demás organizaciones especializadas para que esta difusión pueda llegar a las comunidades de base, pues un pueblo que no conoce sus derechos es fácil de engañar. Además, es necesario que los miembros del Foro Permanente de las 7 regiones socioculturales, en coordinación con las organizaciones y pueblos indígenas, elaboren metodologías para capacitación sobre derechos humanos de los pueblos indígenas, en particular la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Se alienta al Foro Permanente a que constituye su diálogo con organismos y fondos de la ONU. Pero es importante que se creen mecanismos para evaluación periódicas de los planes, programas y prácticas de las oficinas del país, Naciones Unidas, respecto del cumplimiento a la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. De igual forma, quisiera recomendar que el Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas contemple la posibilidad de crear programas de becas para jóvenes indígenas en las oficinas del país de Naciones Unidas, en estrecha cooperación con universidades de alcance regional. En el caso particular de los Andes, se podría empezar a coordinar con la Universidad Andina Simón Bolívar. Al concluir, me permito manifestar que si estamos aquí participando del octavo periodo de sesiones, es porque valoramos al Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas. Tenemos la esperanza de que este espacio siga fortaleciendo, gane la autoridad necesaria con el apoyo de los pueblos indígenas para que el sistema de la ONU y los estados implementen las recomendaciones del foro en estrecha cooperación con los pueblos indígenas a la luz de la aprobación de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Oscar. The next speaker in our list is Miguel Nisokio Martinez, Union Nicola de Tridos Indigenous. Could you please take the floor?
Gracias, señora presidenta, miembros del foro, hermanos y hermanas indígenas, muy buenas tardes. Voy a hablar a nombre de la Unión Nacional de Traductores Indígenas. Nosotros nos dedicamos a promover el uso y desarrollo de las lenguas indígenas y la traducción de las Sagradas Escrituras en México. Gracias por esta oportunidad y queremos decir que, en cuanto a la mujer, los niños y los jóvenes indígenas, los cuales han sido y siguen siendo durante el presente decenio temas de mayor atención por parte de este foro. Nos pronunciamos totalmente a favor de que estos grupos reciban apoyo y apreciación de parte de nuestros gobiernos y la sociedad en general. Estos grupos que viven en las zonas urbanas de nuestro país, quienes han sufrido la peor parte de la indiferencia política y social, y son ellos, entre las poblaciones urbanas, los más desprotegidos y olvidados. Y por si hiciera falta, queremos mencionar que esta situación ha contribuido de forma determinante a la pronta desaparición de las lenguas y culturas indígenas. Cabe argumentar que nuestro tiempo es un tiempo de inmigración. Hoy en día los pueblos indígenas se han establecido en las grandes ciudades del mundo, por lo cual los gobiernos deben reestructurar de manera profunda la educación que se imparte en las zonas urbanas, reconociendo la presencia indígena y que se vive en una sociedad multilingüe y multicultural. En lo que respecta a las comunidades indígenas asentadas en zonas rurales, notamos un resurgimiento de la valorización y orgullo por la lengua y la cultura de parte de los nativos. Esto debido principalmente a la promoción del valor de estos elementos que ha venido desarrollando el Instituto Nacional de Lenguas Indígenas y otras dependencias en los últimos años. Estos avances son de gran importancia, pero no son suficientes. Todavía hay un gran vacío en la educación bilingüe, pues la mayor parte de las escuelas en los pueblos indígenas se desarrolla toda su enseñanza en la lengua mayoritaria, que es el español, y esto anula prácticamente la esperanza de la supervivencia de la lengua materna de los niños indígenas. Por lo que pedimos al Foro Permanente recomiende al Gobierno de México lo siguiente: que las autoridades educativas redoblen sus esfuerzos para que los niños indígenas de México reciban educación adecuada en su propia variante y en su propio contexto cultural. Para esto se requiere que los profesores sean reubicados correctamente, ya que en la actualidad en muchas comunidades se encuentran profesores que no hablan la variante de la comunidad. Para el Foro Permanente sobre los Asuntos Indígenas sugerimos que en el futuro se les dé más oportunidad de participación a los indígenas de expresarse. Solicitamos también, de ser posible, se tengan talleres o reuniones donde más indígenas pueden hacer preguntas y expresar sus inquietudes. Finalmente, extendemos nuestro reconocimiento a todos aquellos que reconocen el valor de las personas indígenas y llevan a cabo proyectos de promoción y ayuda. Reprobamos a todos aquellos que aún siguen minimizando el valor y la importancia de las personas, los pueblos, las culturas y las lenguas indígenas. Exhortamos a las autoridades en todos sus niveles y a la población nacional e internacional a abrir un espacio, primeramente en su corazón y luego en las áreas en las que tenga facultad para apoyar y respaldar a los pueblos indígenas de México y el mundo. Gracias.
Thank you very much, Nigel. The use of indigenous language is very important, and I recommend that you also get in touch with UNESCO as one of the promoters of indigenous languages. The next speaker in the list is Michelena Taraska, Otomonia Eriaiki. Please, could you take the floor?
Milesker Lendakali Agurgaria. Egunon Deneri. Merci, Madame la Présidente. Madame la Présidente, membre du bureau et représentant des délégations des peuples autochtones ici présents, en tant que femme et mère basque, soucieuse de l'avenir de mon peuple et de sa langue, l'Euskara, j'interviens afin de vous demander et de demander à cette instance que soit inclus dans ses futurs travaux, de façon permanente et chaque année, la thématique de la langue et de l'éducation, la langue étant une caractéristique essentielle d'un peuple autochtone ancré sur son territoire. La langue basque, Euskara, langue autochtone en France, est en danger. Chaque génération qui passe emporte avec elle quantité de primo-parlants qui n'ont pas transmis ce patrimoine. Et chaque génération qui arrive parle moins que la précédente. Avec moins de 30% de locuteurs, une langue est en danger d'extinction. Seuls 10% des élèves basques sont scolarisés en système immersif, le seul système pédagogique capable de former des locuteurs aptes à transmettre la langue. L'an dernier, nous soulignions que la langue basque n'a en France aucun statut légal, car ce pays refuse d'officialiser plusieurs dizaines de langues parlées sur son territoire, langues pourtant plus anciennes que le français. À ce jour, aucune avancée. La France refuse toujours de ratifier la Charte européenne des langues minoritaires de 1992, sous prétexte qu'elle est anticonstitutionnelle. La langue basque ne doit sa survie qu'au travail acharné de milliers de militants autochtones qui ont su créer des outils prouvant chaque jour leur pertinence et leur efficacité. Ikastola, école en langue basque de la maternelle au baccalauréat, centre de loisirs en basque ou d'Alekou, cours pour les adultes. Mais la transmission ne passe pas seulement par l'enseignement, mais surtout dans l'utilisation sociale de nos langues. Pour arriver à cela, il faut que le gouvernement français comprenne qu'être plurilingue est une richesse et une force, un pont naturel vers les autres avec leurs différences. Les hommes et les femmes autochtones qui vivent dans le monde d'aujourd'hui sont ceux qui demain construiront la paix. Car ayant subi et subissant aujourd'hui injustice et discrimination, ils savent ce que le mot « respect » veut dire et ils portent en eux les valeurs de justice et de tolérance. Conscients du danger de disparition des langues autochtones et forts d'une expérience militante en Pays basque, nous avons créé l'association Garabide, dont le souhait est d'établir des ponts entre l'expérience culturelle basque et les réalités linguistiques et culturelles des peuples autochtones dans le monde. Des programmes d'échanges culturels sont en place et à disposition des peuples intéressés. Nous sommes conscients que toutes ces initiatives ne suffiront pas à assurer la survie de l'Euskara sans son officialisation par la France. Nous demandons donc à l'instance permanente de mettre les moyens nécessaires afin que la France respecte enfin les langues autochtones et minorisées parlées sur son territoire et qu'elle applique immédiatement les articles 8, 13 et 16 de la Déclaration des droits des peuples autochtones.
Nous demandons qu'elle signale à la France qu'il est grand temps pour elle de ratifier la Charte européenne des langues minoritaires et de répondre favorablement à la demande d'un statut d'autonomie pour le Pays basque, statut qui permettra au peuple autochtone basque d'assurer la sauvegarde de sa langue. Nous demandons également à l'instance permanente d'instaurer chaque année et de façon permanente dans son agenda la thématique « Langues autochtones et éducation ». Nous demandons enfin à l'instance permanente, afin d'assurer le suivi de l'application de ces décisions, de nommer un expert autochtone pour la zone Europe de l'Ouest, considérant que la France, elle aussi, a ses autochtones dans l'Hexagone. Nous soumettons à ce titre la candidature d'un expert basque. Merci, Madame la Présidente, membre du Bureau et délégation des peuples autochtones ici présents. Milesker et Agora Errien Arteko El Kartachuna. Vive la solidarité entre les peuples autochtones. Merci.
Thank you very much, Teresa Michelena. I'd like now to call on Guido Coniheros, who is a representative of Centro de Cultura Pueblo Nación Mapuche, Pelonsaro. Guido Cano Coniheros is not in the room. Okay, I'll move now to Miriam Sanchez, who is speaking on behalf of Comunidad Integradora del Saber Andino Sisa. Miriam Sanchez.
Aquí, señora presidenta.
Yes, okay, you have the floor.
Muy buenas tardes con todas y con todos los compañeros aquí presentes. Señora presidenta, es difícil para los pueblos indígenas referirse al desarrollo sin mencionar los derechos básicos de las tierras, territorios, en la cultura, la identidad y la libre determinación. Sin embargo, el usufructo de la extracción de minerales, petróleo y gas a gran escala con los fines comerciales, la tala de bosques, son las consecuencias negativas sobre la biodiversidad, la construcción de represas para megacentrales hidroeléctricas y las autopistas, la agricultura con utilización a gran escala de productos químicos, las plantaciones forestales industriales, la designación de áreas que incluyen tierras pertenecientes a pueblos indígenas como zonas de protección ambiental, etcétera. Estas nuevas políticas inventan palabras con tal de no llamar las cosas por su nombre, enmascarándolas de humanitarias. Es decir, no mencionan jamás lo que se dice genocidio, tortura, empobrecimiento, conquista, explotación y sangre. Por todos estos antecedentes y por todas las cosas que pasan en nuestras tierras, recomendamos y exigimos que se tome en cuenta la recomendación del Foro Permanente en la cuarta sesión, en donde se recomienda al Sistema de las Naciones Unidas que el proceso y órganos gubernamentales sigan resolviendo el consentimiento previo, libre e informado del pluralismo.
Can you please speak more slowly? The okay. interpreter is really having a difficult time.
Está bien. Que se garantice la seguridad e integridad cultural, espiritual, ambiental, social y económica de los pueblos indígenas en áreas de frontera, según el artículo 32 del convenio 169 de la OIT. Insistimos, se vigile el impacto de los megaproyectos en tierras y territorios de los pueblos indígenas. Instamos a los estados a reconocer y garantizar con plenitud a los pueblos indígenas el derecho de conservar la propiedad imprescriptible sobre sus tierras y territorios que históricamente y tradicionalmente han ocupado, que están inalienables, inembargables e indivisibles, así como la administración, uso y usufructo de sus recursos naturales. Que los gobiernos suspendan todo tipo de proceso sobre concesiones y explotaciones de los recursos naturales encontrados en nuestras tierras y territorios ancestrales, garantizando nuestro derecho al consentimiento previo, libre e informado.
Please slow down. You picked up speed again. Speak slowly, because the interpreters are already complaining about the speed of your talk. Please speak slowly.
Exhortamos a los estados a implementar medidas jurídicas de las constituciones y que garanticen la protección efectiva de los derechos de propiedad de tierra y posesión. En general, promover legislaciones que permitan cumplir a cabalidad con lo dispuesto en el artículo 6 del convenio 169 de la OIT. Por último, apoyamos la declaración de Anchorage, especialmente los llamados a la acción contenidos en el párrafo 6 y 13, buscando verdaderas soluciones a la contaminación de nuestras tierras y proporcionar recursos de supervivencia colectiva para responder a la crisis climática. Gracias.
Thank you very much. Miriam Sanchez, who spoke on behalf of Comunidad Integradora del Saber Andino, CISA. I'd like now to call on Saturnino Sapon, who will speak on behalf of Movimiento Acción e Resistencia Mar. Yes, you have the floor, sir.
Okay. Muchas gracias. Señora Presidenta, deseamos saludarle y felicitarle por sus logros y trabajo al frente del Foro Permanente para las Cuestiones Indígenas de los diferentes pueblos del mundo, nuestro hogar. El cambio climático es un fenómeno que desafía la capacidad organizativa de los diferentes países del planeta, los que trabajan para buscar mejorar las condiciones ambientales actuales. Con ello, los ciclos del agua amenazan la producción agrícola, el cual nosotros necesitamos sus beneficios. El efecto en la producción se ve reducida y nos lleva a sufrir escaseces, llevándonos a sufrir hambre y pobreza. Los dirigentes de las Naciones Unidas buscan formas, alternativas, programas, acuerdos, todo de manera conjunta para mermar los cambios que sufre el clima de nuestro planeta y la civilización humana. No se debe olvidar que el conocimiento en cuanto al mantenimiento adecuado de los recursos naturales existentes en el planeta son los pueblos originarios los que tienen el conocimiento ancestral y formas para proteger, mantener y la sustentabilidad de ello. Considerando el conocimiento de las comunidades locales, es coherente fortalecer con recursos técnicos y financieros para la sustentabilidad y aplicabilidad de proyectos en beneficio de nuestros recursos, dejando en mano de las personas adecuadas el trabajo de vigilancia de las áreas ecológicas establecidas en las comunidades rurales. Se debe considerar fortalecer de manera financiera y directa a las organizaciones establecidas en las mismas comunidades locales. De igual manera, se debe de hacer valer el derecho de los pueblos indígenas a la conservación y protección del medio ambiente contenidos en el artículo 29 en sus incisos 1, 2 y 3 en la Declaración de los Pueblos Originarios. Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you very much, Saturnino Sixapon. I call now on Miguel Ibanez, who will speak on behalf of Comunidad Campesina de Tauria. Yes, you have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. En realidad, el enfoque histórico que está ocurriendo en los pueblos indígenas se está refiriendo exclusivamente a un enfoque de retroceso de nuestros derechos y de nuestras libertades consagradas ya en la legislación internacional y avaladas por las Naciones Unidas. Sin embargo, los estados están haciendo muy poco en cumplir con estas normas internacionales y también están creando una forma casi paralela de poder escaparse del cumplimiento de estas normas y desarrollar una política en complicidad con la banca internacional y el desarrollo de las burguesías nacionales e intermediarias para poder cancelar los derechos de los pueblos indígenas en sus territorios, en sus tierras y recursos naturales. Tenemos el caso en el Perú, que la mina Yanacocha no ha cumplido con los requerimientos ambientales de las propias leyes del Estado. Un derrame de mercurio originó la muerte de cerca de 20 personas y la enfermedad de más de 200. La compañía Yanacocha está recurriendo a sistemas que retardan la implementación de la justicia y el pago y la reparación justa para esta población, y todo esto con el apoyo de los organismos del Estado. De igual manera, los estados de Perú y Brasil están firmando o han firmado ya el famoso convenio energético en el cual están planeando la construcción de la represa de Paquixapango con una altura de más de 140 o 150 metros que va a cambiar toda la fisiología, toda la geomorfología, impactando severamente en más de 6.000 pobladores del pueblo Ayaninca, obligándolos a traslados forzosos y a modificar todo el esquema de la biodiversidad en concomitancia con la pobreza y la extrema pobreza que actualmente están sufriendo. Por otro lado, todos los pueblos indígenas del bosque tropical amazónico del Perú están actualmente en pie de lucha, solicitando al gobierno que se derogue las leyes que se dieron a espaldas de los pueblos indígenas, sin hacer la más mínima consulta, solamente con el pretexto que esto va a ayudar al desarrollo, el desarrollo entre comillas, y la implementación del Tratado de Libre Comercio. Estos son hechos concretos que están reflejando que no existe una implementación de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Por lo tanto, voy a leer rápidamente todo lo que se refiere a una especie de conclusiones. Solicitar la paralización de los megaproyectos que se realizan en el Valle del Ene y que van a afectar al pueblo Ayaninca. También que se agreguen esto a la lucha que está librando Panamá y a otros países con respecto a estos megaproyectos. Segundo, exigir al Estado peruano que defienda a los pueblos indígenas y no a la minera Yanacocha en relación a los daños de derrame de mercurio. Tercero, exigir al foro permanente el cumplimiento del debido proceso en todo lo que se refiere al incidente ocurrido en la expulsión del hermano Nicolás Chango, que esto prácticamente es una violación de los derechos civiles y de los derechos humanos a un participante que se le debe respetar el debido proceso y el reglamento interno de las Naciones Unidas. Cuarto, y siguiendo la línea de la aprobación del Caucus de Sudamérica, solicitar al nuevo gobierno de los Estados Unidos la libertad de Leonard Peltier, líder indígena que se encuentra preso más de 30 años por delitos que nunca se comprobaron, y también todos los presos políticos indígenas que están sufriendo cárcel en el mundo, que no tienen derecho a recibir cultos religiosos, sus costumbres, absolutamente nada. Incluso hay una ley que le prohíbe fumar tabaco, que es parte de su ceremonia. Quiero acabar, señora presidenta, para que también se incluya en este escenario la materia de discusión de la reestructuración del foro permanente que garantice la participación de los pueblos indígenas, porque estamos hablando de ya casi al final de este evento, de esta plenaria aquí en las Naciones Unidas. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Miguel Ibáñez. At this point, I would like to first call on my distinguished colleague, Mr. Carsten Smith, who has put up his flag also. You have the floor, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we now discuss the future work of the forum, I would like, as a member of the forum, to make two observations that I think might be of a more general interest. First, a new element has been the in-depth dialogue with some of the U.S. agencies. Indeed, a success that certainly should continue. However, having dialogues with them is speaking with good friends, having the same values and aims. But the violations of human rights and breaches of the Declaration take always place within jurisdiction of the states. And so far, the states do not comment on such actions here in the forum. The states almost line up these days during the session to pay respect to the Declaration. But the violations go on and are not debated with the states responsible here in the United Nations main forum on indigenous issues. The forum ought therefore to work successively towards the aim that the states will discuss their actions and non-implementation of the Declaration here in the forum. And secondly, we are now in the post-declaration era. But the more precise obligations and powers of the forum, according to the Declaration, were not debated during this session. A general comment on Article 42 concerning the new function of the forum was adopted without any comments from the participants. I consider this to be a good sign for the future application of the Declaration. However, I think a few lines in this document deserves to be emphasized, and I shall read the last paragraph. I quote, "The Forum shall, according to Article 42, look to the Declaration as a set of superior norms that ought to be effectively applied to all national jurisdictions. Thereby, the Declaration will gain in the working of the Forum a superior status in relation to national law. Moreover, it is the duty of the Forum to spread this view all over the world." Unquote. I like these lines, and I hope that this perspective, that is the national implementation of the Declaration and the forum's follow-up of this implementation, should be even more in the center when we are speaking on the future work of the forum. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank my distinguished colleague Carsten Smith for reiterating the point about the responsibilities of states to protect the human rights of indigenous peoples, particularly those contained in the Declaration. Thank you very much, Carsten. I'd like now to go back to Gladys Silva, who will speak on behalf of Habitat Pro. Is Gladys Silva in here? Yes, please.
Okay. Ay, señora Presidenta, se me ha pedido hablar por Gladys Silva, quien a su vez estaría elevando una declaración de un hermano nuestro de la Sierra Norte del Perú. Mi nombre es Cristina Herencia y soy observadora, pero también soy parte del movimiento de confederaciones de nacionalidades indígenas del Perú. Entonces, aquí está la declaración del hermano Alcides Chiquilín. Señora Presidenta del Foro Permanente, voy a leer el discurso de Alcides Chiquilín de la Nación Quechua, región de Cajamarca, provincia de San Pablo, comunidad indígena de Jancos, quien no pudo hacerlo la semana pasada. Estoy aquí para expresar el sentir de mis hermanos de las comunidades de Cayancas, Unanca, Tumbaden, Porcón, San Pablo, San Luis, San Bernardino, Chilete y Choropampa, y otras que están sufriendo los estragos que originan las corporaciones mineras de Yanacocha y Newpont como producto de las operaciones por la extracción especialmente del oro. Este conjunto de acciones en la cabecera de las cuencas hidrográficas de los ríos Puclush, El Rejo, Yaminchat, San Pablo, que en conjunto forman el río Jequetepeque, contaminan todas las corrientes superficiales y subterráneas, incluyendo un grupo de 40 lagunas que constituyen la fuente de origen de agua potable y de riego que son aprovechadas por los pueblos mencionados. Y a esto se suma la pérdida de la capacidad reproductiva de los peces en las lagunas y ríos, restando la disponibilidad de proteínas para el pueblo. Por otro lado, en 1992, la minera Yanacocha derramó un camión de mercurio en la comunidad de Choropampa. Niños y niñas y la población en general cogieron esta sustancia sin tener conocimiento de los efectos mortales de la misma. El mercurio afectó los órganos vitales de más de 500 personas, de las cuales han muerto una docena y el resto tienen enfermedades propias de la sustancia adquirida. También la minera Yanacocha ha querido ampliar sus operaciones en la montaña contigua llamada Cerro Quilish, acciones que provocaron protestas de las comunidades. Por tanto, la minera Yanacocha ha iniciado una campaña de intimidación, soborno y asesinatos selectivos de los líderes indígenas. El pueblo de Choropampa no ha querido recibir la compensación ridícula que ofrece la empresa minera por haber ocasionado la muerte de sus pobladores y actualmente continúa luchando por una justa compensación y cese de actividades mineras. El Estado peruano ha continuado con su política de apoyo a corporaciones mineras, criminalizando las protestas sociales, persiguiendo a los líderes indígenas hasta ponerlos en las cárceles. El tipo de extracción de minas a tajo abierto produce polvo sedimentable que es nocivo para cultivos básicos y pastizales para la crianza de ganado. Toda esta contaminación ha permitido el incremento de enfermedades desconocidas y una desnutrición crónica. Cuando comprendemos los seres humanos que el oro no se puede comer, lo que ocurre a la Pachamama o la Madre Tierra, también cuando no entendemos esto, también lo que le ocurre a la Pachamama o Madre Tierra nos ocurrirá a nosotros. Para concluir, señora Presidente, denuncio al Estado peruano que no está honrando el cumplimiento del convenio 169 de la OIT y la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Por lo tanto, recomendamos que el Relator Especial de Derechos Indígenas visite nuestra región y confirme la situación en que viven nuestras comunidades. Muchas gracias. Alcides Chiquilín, Comunidad de Cajamarca, Perú.
Thank you very much. I would like now to call on Tomás Alarcón from the Comisión Jurídica para el Autodesarrollo de los Pueblos Originarios Andinos. And I'd like to ask all of you to please keep to your 3 minutes so that we will finish all the speaking list. Yes, Tomás Alarcón, you have the floor.
Muy buenas tardes, señora Presidenta. En primer lugar, quisiéramos reconocer el enorme aporte de los pueblos indígenas a los debates de este foro, que esperamos sean bien valorados y recepcionados por el honorable cuerpo de expertos, representantes de estados y las agencias. Ha llegado el momento de reflexionar, hermanos, para proponer futuras acciones. Con todo respeto, nuestra organización considera que luego de casi una década de pre- y post-foro, las líneas de su mandato brindan una amplia cobertura incluyente que nos impone el imperativo de no dejar afuera a nadie y escuchar a todos en aras de acopiar mayor cantidad de propuestas. La indiferencia de que somos víctimas por parte de los estados para no estar presente en este foro demuestra que no tienen ninguna voluntad de cumplir con las recomendaciones de este honorable cuerpo. Acabamos de escuchar a un experto reclamando de que aquí se debe recibir y deben estar presentes los estados, porque aquí todos aportamos
incluidos los fiscalizadores de la sociedad civil, como los organismos de supervisión de tratados de las Naciones Unidas. Es el caso del Comité de Tratados que en el mes de abril de 2009, en el caso Poma Puma contra Perú, en que evalúa la situación del pueblo Collán Aymara, a que pertenece la autora, estableció que el Estado parte violó el artículo 27 del Pacto de Derechos Civiles y Políticos e impone la obligación a todos los Estados, por extensión jurisprudencial, a respetar el consentimiento previo e informado de los pueblos indígenas, superando las corruptelas de la mera consulta. Asimismo, hace ley el respeto al estilo de vida de los pueblos indígenas, incluido el uso de sus recursos bajo su cosmovisión. Los expertos del Comité de Derechos Civiles y Políticos que emitieron este dictamen rinden cuenta de sus resoluciones a la Asamblea General. Por tanto, este foro y su cuerpo administrativo deberá ver para que sus futuras acciones exigir el cumplimiento de toda resolución oficial de Naciones Unidas que promulgara a favor de los pueblos indígenas para que sean cumplidas y sean aplicadas e implementadas. En este orden de ideas consideramos que el foro permanente debe disponer la Secretaría recopile y ponga a la vista la resolución referida, así como todas las resoluciones que emitan los demás organismos de Naciones Unidas sobre pueblos indígenas, a fin de evaluar y adoptar las mejores acciones que beneficien el avance de una solución a los problemas que afectan a los pueblos indígenas, máxime que esta sesión fue convocada para tomar acciones concretas sobre cómo implementar todos y cada uno de los artículos de la Declaración de los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Sin embargo, existen también otras situaciones de urgencia a las que el foro puede dedicar desde la sesión, porque nosotros desde la sesión anterior hemos solicitado al foro dedicar una tarde completa de debate sobre el tema de los trabajadores migrantes, en el caso concreto de los indios que han inmigrado a este país desde el resto del continente, son asediados cotidianamente en las calles, plazas donde transitan, bajo el pretexto de afectar a la calidad de vida de la ciudad y por vivir en un pueblo, las casas pierden su valor. Eso indica o mancha la imagen de los pueblos indígenas, degradando su dignidad. Y espero, como seres humanos, al compararlos, porque los compara casi como basura.
Try to conclude.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Tomas Alarcón from Capaz. We call now on Shirley Chefney from the Peace Action International. Shirley, you have the
yes.
Floor.
Yeah. Distinguished members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and all the delegates and friends here. I'm a peace activist, and I was happy to be a co-sponsor with many other organizations such as the National Native American Prisoners' Rights Coalition, the American Indian Movement West, the Navajo Prison Project, the American Indian Prisoners Work Group, Habitat Pro Peru, and many other Latin American groups and people that came, because the theme that we wish to recommend for the future of permanent forum attention is the problem of indigenous people's human rights as political prisoners, detainees, exiles, and migrants deprived of due process and justice under existing human rights legal frameworks. The human rights of incarcerated, detained, or exiled indigenous people as political prisoners has up till now not received the intense scrutiny the problem demands under the existing human rights framework of the United Nations. Peace Action, along with the American Indian Movement West and all the other members spoke and heard testimony the other day from all global regions of the disproportionate numbers of indigenous prisoners incarcerated, abused with impunity, and deprived of their social, cultural, and economic rights within the dominant judicial systems of the nation states. We understand this is a complex issue that requires more than anecdotal testimony to remedy the calls for attention by the United Nations. Many of the heroes and heroines of the nation states making up the United Nations today achieve recognition and status through the active struggles of past prisoners of conscience. They are the leaders here today. We wish to recall the names of those outstanding leaders who helped forge the very instruments of international human rights law with years of sacrifice in the prison camps and detention centers, who resisted encroachment on their lands and resources by governments and corporations, and have tried to keep their traditional identities and societies intact at great personal sacrifice, who will remain unknown without a focus on their large numbers and the complex root causes for their imprisonment. A brief summary, I'm going to give just a few of the topics that were covered at the roundtable and the recommendations that came out. There was a discussion of the juvenile justice system and treatment of minors in violation of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and the USA in particular for sentencing over 2,000 minors to prison to life without parole. I also want to mention the vast number of children incarcerated in prisons from the favelas of Brazil who are indigenous children. The increasing numbers of indigenous women being held and the lack of freedom of religious rights and practices. The immigration laws of countries who have failed to have a clear national policy yet incarcerate whole families as political pawns, separating parents from their children and held without communication, deported without due process.
Can you move to your recommendations,
yes,
please?
We wish to highlight the case of Leonard Peltier, perhaps America's Nelson Mandela, who has been in prison since 1977. One of the recommendations is for the Permanent Forum to call on the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples to request to visit the USA prison systems and to arrange for a special visit with Leonard Peltier, longest held political prisoner. We want the Human Rights Council to appoint a special rapporteur to investigate the conditions and treatments of indigenous prisoners. And we want for the Permanent Forum to consider a report on indigenous prisoners annually and consider it as part of all its future work and as a very special theme to be taken very seriously. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Shirley Chesney. I'd like now to call on Laurie Johnston from the Yamasee people and other organizations. You have the floor, madam.
Thank you for hearing the Southeast Indigenous People's Center and Friends. Peace to all our relations. We were assigned by our Creator to care for the land in which we were discovered by colonial powers. If we are to survive the climate crisis, we must respect our Creator's wisdom and allow Indigenous peoples to exercise environmental sovereignty according to our rights under natural law. We call the Permanent Forum to address in the future the need for the development of a body of international Indigenous law to support our environmental sovereignty. As we consider ways to implement free, prior, and informed consent, we direct ECOSOC's attention to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the Convention on Elimination of Racial Discrimination, the American Convention on Human Rights, the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, the Convention on Biological Diversity, especially 8J and 10C, ILO 169, UN agreements, and other national and international declarations, conventions, protocols, agreements, and laws that clearly recognize that indigenous peoples have the rights to self-determination and to administer their own resources. We ask the UN Permanent Forum, and ECOSOC to recognize indigenous environmental sovereignty. We call on ECOSOC to fund an indigenous task force to develop a framework of UNDRIP norms to support a body of international law that applies to indigenous issues and communities. Because we are facing a climate crisis, we urge ECOSOC to prioritize the development of international indigenous environmental law. We need UN support to help national state governments implement the UNDRIP by employing existing indigenous experts on international indigenous issues of legal access and norms. We call on ECOSOC to help national state governments meet their obligation to implement internationally recognized rights at the regional and local level by supporting the development of international indigenous lawyers. The field of international indigenous law must be studied academically and practically if we are to implement UNDRIP and other supporting UN agreements. We ask ECOSOC to establish an indigenous managed program in UNU or another appropriate agency to study the field and to work with relevant NGOs to facilitate an archive for related local, national, and international cases. This study and archive program will enable indigenous professionals to coordinate the development of international indigenous environmental law in order to implement UN agreements. We ask the Permanent Forum to promote the field of international indigenous law and thus contribute to the creation of a body of local, national, and international policies that allow for the implementation of UNDRIP, especially in the area of environmental law. This will enable indigenous peoples to study, mitigate, and adapt to the increasing climate crisis to the benefit of the entire world. We urge ECOSOC to consider the great benefits that can come with this nominal investment in international indigenous environmental law and create the proposed International Indigenous Law Task Force and Program. Thank you for hearing the caretakers of the earth.
Thank you very much, Laurie Johnston. I call now on Craig Cromeling, who will speak on behalf of the New South Wales Aboriginal Land Council. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This intervention is made on behalf of a number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisations from Australia present at this forum. Extractive industries are placing increasing pressure on Indigenous peoples to gain access to traditional lands. States should consult and cooperate in good faith with Indigenous peoples in order to obtain their free and informed consent prior to the approval of any project affecting their lands or territories and other resources. This is clearly stated under Article 32 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In Australia's northwest, this right has recently been put at risk, with the state government threatening to compulsorily acquire land if the traditional owners didn't reach an agreement on a suitable site for the development of an industrial hub. Traditional owners have recently given conditional approval to the proposed site. However, such a coercive approach by the state government rides roughshod over the rights of Indigenous peoples and seriously contravenes the principles under the UN Declaration. It is imperative that traditional peoples have full recognition of their cultural rights on land, that they participate fully and effectively in decision-making and consultation processes, and have free, prior and informed consent for development projects. We recommend that this forum encourages all states to implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and to promote and protect the rights of Indigenous peoples with regard to extractive industries. Madam Chair, climate change has caught the attention of the international community, and forums such as this are providing us with the opportunity to ensure Indigenous voices are heard and acknowledged. For Indigenous peoples across the globe, climate change raises unique challenges that will have a direct impact on our cultural and traditional lands. Indigenous peoples of Australia have strong connections to country, and caring for that country comes with a high cultural responsibility. As such, our communities are deeply concerned about degradation to the natural environment, whether it is from regional development, extractive industries, or climate change. Like many small island states, Indigenous peoples of Australia face the loss of their lands or territories due to submersion or inundation. Australia's Indigenous people can also expect more injuries, deaths, post-traumatic stress disorders, and infectious disease outbreaks as a result of more frequent or intense extreme events, including storms, cyclones, floods, droughts, and bushfires. Climate change will also have a significant impact on Australia's scarce water resources, which is compounded by the increasing development on traditional lands by extractive industries. The growing demand on our water supplies will have a severe impact on our traditions, culture and livelihoods, and we need to maintain focus on the importance of preserving cultural traditions associated with water for future generations. The Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change, held recently in Alaska, resulted in the Anchorage Declaration, a document that calls for action on the current climate crisis. It is well known that Indigenous people are and will be most affected by climate change, yet we have contributed least to its impacts. It is time for this to change, and the most appropriate vehicle for change is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Our rights, as set out in the Declaration, must be upheld in all decision-making and activities related to climate change. Indigenous peoples must be part of the debate, and we must take a greater role in the solutions. As the Anchorage Declaration states, when specific programs and projects affect our lands, territories, environment and natural resources, our right to free, prior and informed consent, including the right to say no, must be recognised and respected. Madam Chair, it is critical that states such as Australia adopt aggressive strategies to minimise the effects of climate change. Under the right to self-determination and the principle of free, prior and informed consent, it is essential that Indigenous peoples are centrally involved in decision-making to ensure the sustainable management of our land and the future of our children. We recommend that this forum adds its support to the Anchorage Declaration so that the strong Indigenous voice is heard at the 15th meeting of the parties to the Kyoto Protocol in Copenhagen in 2009. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Craig Cromelin, who spoke on behalf of various organizations of Aborigines in Australia. The next person on my list is Peter Smith, who will speak on behalf of the Commission of Churches on International Affairs of the World Council of Churches, and after him, Robbie Romero. Is Peter Smith in the room? Yes, you have the floor, sir.
Madam Chairperson, the organisation supporting this intervention, apart from justice issues, wish to refer to the attitude of some states and their lack of concern for the detrimental effect of climate change. Due to the time factor, I will not read the complete intervention, but refer to specific focus on specific points. A statement endorsed by the Executive of the National Council of Churches in Australia and supported by the World Council of Churches reads, "With great vision, the creators of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights enshrine the knowledge that we are all born with inherent dignity and equal and inalienable rights. This great truth leads us to take action, where we see injustice and to treat each other with the dignity and respect inherent in our humanity. We are reminded, however, that 60 years after creating this potent statement of human rights, Indigenous peoples throughout the world have caused to question whether dignity and justice has really been for all. On the matter of climate change, Madam Chairman, our concern for the attitude of the Australian government towards this world-changing event. Since being elected in 2007, the government has signed on to the Kyoto Protocol, apologised to the Stolen Generation, and signed the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. All positive things, and indicated that they would take action in regards to the carbon pollution reduction scheme and to reduce the carbon pollution by 5%. Not a great amount, but a start. On the 4th of May this year, just 3 weeks ago, the government announced that more than $1 billion would be made available to companies which are among the big polluters of our environment. This was in addition to the more than $7.4 billion already announced. Australians will wait until after the next election, which I think is planned for 2010, before the carbon pollution reduction scheme begins. The major polluters of our environment being rewarded with billions of dollars and the carbon pollution reduction scheme being postponed to an unspecified date. The emissions reduction target remains the same, a mere 5%. Unless the government can be convinced to take affirmative action, to not only proceed with the carbon pollution reduction scheme, but to increase the target to that nearer to other progressive and responsible states. Madam Chairman, I'll now go to our recommendations, but we just wanted to mention that we wish our government to take an overt commitment to human rights, and which leads to development agenda that we are doomed to repeat past mistakes and wrongs if this doesn't happen. We recommend that the Permanent Forum and ECOSOC consider what appropriate action can be taken to encourage those states which are not living up to the promises made when they signed on the support to support the Kyoto Protocol and the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme. We suggest that the Millennium Development Goals must be aligned with poverty reduction strategies that address the particular needs of Indigenous peoples. Without meaningful participation of Indigenous peoples, our marginalisation and exclusion will continue. We ask that the investigation and condemnation against the trafficking of women be increased, and that the Permanent Forum, through the relevant agencies, promote laws against all forms of violence against women. And finally, that the Permanent Forum encourage states to enact laws and protect the human rights of Indigenous peoples who take an active part in protecting their ancestral lands against those industries, including transnational companies, who denigrate the Indigenous peoples' land by environmental violence against Mother Earth. Thank you, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Peter Smith from the World Council of Churches. I call now on Robbie Romero of the American Indian Law Alliance, and after him, Joshua Cooper on Land is Life. Yes, Robbie Romero, you have the floor.
Greetings, Madam Chair, members of the Permanent Forum, our Indigenous sisters and brothers, and to all in attendance here today. I wish to respectfully follow up on the remarks and recommendations made during the 6th and 7th sessions of the Permanent Forum with regard to specific private sector issues. Those recommendations were that the Permanent Forum restrain NGOs using their ECOSAC status with the Permanent Forum from providing corporations access to Indigenous peoples, nations, and organizations for the financial exploitation of Indigenous culture, philosophy, creativity, resources, intellectual property, images, names, and likenesses, or to provide this forum as a vehicle for corporations or NGOs to promote themselves for bottom-line profits at the expense of Indigenous peoples. And two, that the Permanent Forum, in conjunction with the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, WHIP, the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples, develop guidelines regarding corporations and NGOs' activities with Indigenous peoples that contain provisions recognizing Indigenous peoples' right to free, prior, and informed consent, intellectual property rights, traditional knowledge, collective rights over their lands and natural resources. These guidelines should also contain provisions dealing with access to benefit sharing and impact assessment measures. Madam Chair, we would like to know if there have been guidelines developed regarding corporations and NGOs' activities with Indigenous peoples with the provisions noted in these recommendations. We continue to be concerned that corporations and NGOs will persist in promoting themselves and their programs as examples of best practices and good examples, especially in regard to solutions solutions for global warming, climate change, and to the world's economic crisis. There are examples of best practices presented globally by international agencies and transnational corporations that are not transparent and not adequately monitored nor checked for their cultural, spiritual, and environmental impact on Indigenous peoples and Indigenous peoples' homelands, territories, and natural resources. Indigenous peoples are the first to be impacted by the effects of climate change and false solutions. In this moment of crisis, the environmental movement is being used and hijacked for bottom-line profits at the expense of Indigenous peoples' culture, lands, territories, and resources. We recommend that these past two recommendations be revisited by the Permanent Forum's 8th session. Madam Chair, Indigenous peoples are the caretakers of the earth and understand natural law and life in balance. It is this wisdom that plays a crucial role in the survival of Mother Earth. If programs are implemented without free, prior, and informed consent, this will continue the exploitation of our natural resources, culture, philosophy, creativity, intellectual property, traditional knowledge, images, names and likenesses in the name of best practices and good examples. Therefore, Madam Chair, we would like to reiterate the recommendations made during the 6th and 7th sessions of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and make one further recommendation. We would like to recommend that the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues seriously consider President Evo Morales' initiative to fully recognize and implement the rights of nature and of all our relations. By doing this, we can shift the paradigm of how human beings perceive themselves and their relationship with the natural world and begin to address the serious consequences of climate change and its effects on all creation, for all life is sacred. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Robbie Romero. I'd like now to call in Joshua Cooper, who will speak on behalf of Land is Life. Oh, yes, you have the floor. Yes.
This is a joint statement on behalf of the indigenous people from around the world. My name is Leitante Mumakante Mitai from Mitai people from Northeast India. Speaking today on behalf of the organization that make up coalition of indigenous of Lithuania's life, all of us in this room agree that indigenous people inhabit some of the world's most pedestrian and threatened ecosystem. We all know that indigenous people have managed this land and preserved the biodiversity of this land for centuries using traditional knowledge and respect for the earth. The UN Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples contains languages designed to prevent degradation and exploitation of these lands. Yet our territories are in serious jeopardy, both from climate change itself and from proposals being considered and underway that are supposed to be reverse climate change. Indigenous people stand ready to assume their rightful role as equal partners in humankind's research for solutions to climate change. But global policymakers have paid little attention to the demands of the indigenous peoples, limiting their participation in climate change negotiation to the status of observers. We deplore the decision made at Ponjan, Poland last year to strike the indigenous rights provisions from international climate negotiation. On the contrary, all international bodies should formally and consistently involve indigenous peoples whenever and wherever they are discussing, designing, and implementing climate change policies and programs. We endorse the process used at Indigenous Peoples Global Summit on Climate Change in Alaska, which used the regional preparatory summit to allow widespread input from indigenous peoples around the world. We also endorse the outcome of this summit, the Alaska Declaration on Climate Change. In addition, the organization that make up Land is Life asks the following recommendations guide the future work of the Permanent Forum. Number one, all UN bodies should formally include indigenous peoples when discussing designing and implementing climate change policies and programs, including UNFCCC at COP15. Number two, implementation of climate change policies or programs funded by the World Bank, UN, RED, and International Development Bank, governments, or any multilateral funders should respect the rights of the indigenous peoples as adopted in the UN Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples. Number three, climate change should not be based as an excuse for the violation of the indigenous peoples' lives, rights, lands, territories, natural resources, health, or cultural identity. Number four, any intervention along the lines of RED should not be used as an excuse for eviction of indigenous people from their own territories in order to create space for non-indigenous-led mitigation activities such as commercial forests or protected areas. Number five, all climate change intervention policies and a program designed or implemented by UN, its agencies, the World Bank, International Development Bank, and the government must provide for the full and the complete free prior informed consent by any and all indigenous people in the territory affected, must acknowledge and support indigenous people's traditional knowledge, must acknowledge the resilience of the indigenous peoples in dealing with climate change, must take into account that governments and indigenous peoples in many countries are in conflict over the appropriate use of natural resources that exist on indigenous territories. Must include
please,
safeguards.
Please conclude your statement now, please.
must include safeguard, address serious issues of government corruption and a culture of impunity in certain countries where conflict over natural resources. In conclusion, climate change mitigation projects at a local, regional, national, international level offer an opportunity for the full implementation of indigenous rights as listed in UNDIRP. The climate change we are all facing should be seized as an opportunity for full inclusion of indigenous people as equal partners in international negotiation to save our planet. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I have still a few people on my list. I have just three people, but I would like to give this opportunity to my dear colleague, Mr. Mick Dodson, and we will start with the list again tomorrow morning before we go to the next agenda item. You have the floor, Mr. Mick Dodson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, everyone, or perhaps good evening, everyone. I'm grateful for this opportunity to return to item four and inform my colleagues and the session, the meeting, of a visit I had to Hawaii last year in October. It was at the invitation of the Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights, the Centre for Hawaiian Studies, the Centre for Pacific Island Studies, the Hawaii Centre for Human Rights Research and Action, Amnesty International Hawaii, and the United Nations Association Hawaii, and the Division of Associated Campus Human Rights Clubs. I was invited to visit in my capacity as a community-nominated member for the Pacific on the Permanent Forum. I gave a series of lectures and talks and presentations during the course of my stay, and I visited a sacred mountain and held discussions with elders and spoke to local high school classes. The Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights hosted me as a keynote speaker for the Know Your Rights Week at Maui Community College, and the title of my address was The Realisation of Human Rights in Australia, Aboriginal Rights Today. I also spoke to an Hawaiian studies class about juxtaposition of Australian Aboriginal and Kanaka Maoli struggles for self-determination. The Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights arranged for me to visit the sacred mountain, Haleakala. There is a proposal, Madam Chair, to build a new telescope on the mountain, which is opposed by local Native Hawaiian NGOs. This was an opportunity for me to visit the summit of the mountain and to view firsthand the potential violations of human and earth rights due to the proposed development against the wishes of the Kanaka Maoli. The Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights also hosted an evening community dialogue at the Maui Community College, where I spoke about the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, global Indigenous Peoples Movement for Justice. I also spoke to students at the University of Hawaii and spoke to them on the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the implementation of international law into daily living of Indigenous peoples around the world. I also became part of the Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights program of human rights education with elementary high schools. I visited Iolani School and spoke with three classes about Indigenous rights and on decolonisation and the power of non-violence to transform society. The Hawaiian Institute for Human Rights and the Hawaiian Centre for Human Rights Studies Research and Action co-sponsored an address I gave at the University of Hawaii at Manoa on the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, implementation of international law in the Hawaiian Islands. I also had at that time the opportunity to meet afterwards with members of various departments interested in future collaboration. And my final talk was on human rights in Oceania, the right of self-determination in the liquid continent. Finally, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank all those organisations who assisted my visit, and I particularly want to mention Mr Joshua Cooper, without whom the visit would not have eventuated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mick Dodson. I'd like to announce that we have three remaining speakers, and as I mentioned earlier, we will call them tomorrow. And these are Q Xiong from the Hmong Lao Human Rights Council, Pierrette Boru for the Asia Indigenous People's PAC and other organizations, and Tarsila Rivera Saya from Chirapak. So we will start with their interventions tomorrow. I'd ask our secretary to make some announcements.
Just to draw the attention of the members of the forum to the announcement in journal, which says that Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues will hold a briefing on the work of its eighth session for the Permanent Missions of the United Nations on Thursday, 28 May 2009, from 9 to 9:45 a.m. in Conference Room 4. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In accordance with our program of work tomorrow, we shall start our discussion on agenda item 8 on the agenda draft agenda for the ninth session of the forum. At that meeting, the members of the Permanent Forum will present the report on the mission conducted to Paraguay and Bolivia as regards the situation of the Guarani peoples and other indigenous peoples. We will first start with the three people who are remaining on my list, and then we'll move on to agenda item 8. So I'd like to remind my colleagues again about the announcement that we meet here at 9 o'clock for a closed meeting with the representatives of observer states. This meeting is adjourned.